Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio. The Candid Frank Live Show.
Candid Frank Live.
With
about half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill.
John the Argo Boat Logo Granger.
Candid Frank Live.
Christopher Lion's Den Jones. Mike, the CFL is the best football in the world, Townsend. Kelly, Rough Rider Daddy Bale. Manasseh, Blog Talk Radio Show, Geber Medine. And Bruce, Hamilton Tiger Cat, 13th man, John Inch. And the world is all in upheaval. As you can tell from my post, the Raptors continue to win. And as they continue to win, it forces MLSE into a corner and not... They're waiting for a quiet time on their sports calendar to announce the purchase of the Toronto Argonauts. And because of the Leafs bowing out, it looked like, hey, great, you know, this is going to be great. You know, they're going to announce it soon. And then the Raptors have the season they're having, and they're in the playoffs now tied 3-3, and they're going into extra game, only game, one game, and it'll kill it all, and game 7 on Sunday. So things go wrong for the Raptors. Monday there'll be an announcement that the Argonauts were purchased by MLSE. Well, wait, hang on a second. They'll have to call all their friends, which are many, so it probably won't happen until Tuesday or Wednesday. But should the Raptors win, which Serge and I hope, it'll delay things for a while. Right, Serge?
I guess, yeah.
So you want to talk about the Raptors a little bit? You're the guy that...
I don't know. If Chris Jones is here, I don't think you want to hear about basketball.
Oh, never mind. Chris Jones is not in here yet. Oh, wait. Yes, he is. You know, I just saw your phone number. Yes, he is.
Go talk basketball. Fine. It'll be over soon.
Well, soon, yeah, it could be. It's quite possible. Basketball won't end soon, but our interest will. Once
well, doesn't
the Raptors
matter, because the Heat will beat either one. I mean, I don't see the Heat getting...
I don't know. I think
right,
the Raptors
will
get
them a
tough...
You never know.
Especially since I'm waiting for this great announcement that MLSC bought the Argonauts. It can't happen with all this excitement, you know, under the MLSC umbrella. And if the Raptors go another series, next thing you know, the soccer team will be center stage. And you know, it'll never happen.
So has the deal been signed, or are you still in speculation mode?
Let's just say that I have it on authority, on good authority, that the deal has been made.
Okay.
And it's all just a matter of timing. And from what I understand, in fact, the present owner threw out a – well, anyway, there's a sub-deal going on that'll help grease the wheels, if you will. So all we're waiting for is who's opening
the... So you don't want to say this on the air is what you're saying?
No, of course I don't want to say, because then they'll never tell me another secret again.
Well, I'm intrigued. We'll talk later.
Yeah, no, well, hold on a second, because you'll tell everybody. I can't trust you to be quiet about it.
About the Argos? I never talk about the Argos.
Yes, you do. All the bad things. Okay, so, hang on a second. we haven't done anything bad. We're playing right into your hands right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you are.
Hey, Mikey.
Hey, Mikey.
Another world.
What's going on, y'all?
Another world spoken from. So Mike, as a person of color, as an African American, are you offended by the Boston Bruin fans and their behavior? Do you even about their behavior?
Course. Yeah, I got a good friend of mine sent me the link. So, yeah, I'm a surprised by their behavior. But, I mean, it's typical. That's Boston, man. Come on.
I
they like Chris. They don't like nobody.
I mean, whoa. Frank, I'm offended. Okay? I'm offended by it, and I'm a Boston Bruins fan. And
I
think it's disgusting.
That explains everything.
I'm a Boston Bruins fan.
That explains everything.
And I have to be a Boston Bruins fan. Bobby Orr's my cousin.
No, I know. But listen, this isn't really... We're not talking about fans. We're talking about morons. Okay, it's just
of course,
that Boston
of course
has.
We are. I mean,
it's just that Boston has more than their share of morons. That's
yes,
all.
It sounds like the Riders. I mean, it's the same thing.
Oh wait,
so
hang on a second. I don't think you'd ever see a Rider fan use the N-word when an opponent of African American heritage, or in this case, African-Canadian heritage, would do that kind of thing. I just happen to think that
it's
Canadians
are far...
It's not in
the Canadian vocabulary.
It isn't?
Okay, it's just not part of the Canadian vocabulary.
But
Canadian... And I do agree. And you know what, Frank? And I do agree with what Chris says. And to add to this, and then I'll let y'all talk about it.
Okay.
If the guy was a Boston Bruins player... shooting the winning goal for the Boston to move on to the next stage, he wouldn't have been called the N-word. He'd have been, hey, he's the best player on the team. Hurrah, let's buy his jersey, blah, blah, blah. You understand what I'm saying? Moron.
Yeah.
Straight
yeah,
moron.
Just not a moron. I mean, I'm
if,
not talking.
If it was in reverse, if P.K. Subban played for the Boston Bruins and he scored the winning goal against Montreal, do you think the bunch of Montreal fans passionate about their team, do you believe that they would come up with this type of thing on Twitter?
Nope.
But it's,
no, guys,
I don't.
You have to remember, too, Malcolm Subban was drafted by the Bruins, PK's brother, and
yep,
Jerome McKinla is very proud of his African-Canadian heritage and also the bit of other ethnicity he has in his heritage, which I can't quote at this time. But, you know, I mean, it's insulting to guys in Boston, and especially good old Willie O'Ree, who, you know, back in the day fought through some much harder times.
Much harder.
And it's surprising
really
out of Quebec, too.
Okay.
My bad, Kelly. We just crossed each other. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Kelly. Finish what you're saying, and then your turn. Well, then it's your turn, Mike.
It's surprising about Quebec, too, because Quebec is noted for giving Willie O'Ree an opportunity with the Quebec Aces in the 50s, and then they also gave Jackie Robinson an opportunity before any major league club would give him an opportunity. So, you know, Quebec isn't necessarily known for their racism
tolerance
towards African Americans.
Hey, look, Canadians. I'm sorry, Mike. It's your turn.
No, I was just going to say And to add to it, you know, really, you know, it's a lot more of that going on around besides the sports. And really, like I was talking to another driver the other day, man, after a while, this crap get old. It's old.
It gets old, Mike, but you know what the problem
it's old,
is. In my heart, what the problem is. Here's what the problem is in my heart. In my heart, the problem is that people in groups are insulated against common sense and common decency by virtue of them hanging around with a group of like-minded, like-thinkers, like people. And then they say stuff privately, you know, and if that comment comes out of that private situation, just like the NBA right now with an owner who, this isn't the first time this guy did this kind of stuff. We all are aware, and I think everybody knows that the tolerance level of the NBA about this guy was extremely high. You know, this wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back. This was the saddle that broke the camel's back.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's the way racism works. You know, it's my ignorance that causes me to be racist. I may not intend to be a racist, but my ignorance helps me to be a racist. And sometimes my ignorance is something that I work on. And that's what's the worst kind of racism is that people don't see, you know, the harm that they do when they do stuff. I'm as guilty as anybody
yep.
else making mistakes. The question for all of us is, do we at least make an attempt to be tolerant and understanding? You know, because we're all ignorant to a degree. You know what I mean?
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I know
depends
I am.
On the subject.
Okay, want to change the subject? Okay.
No, I said it depends on the subject.
Oh, depends on the subject.
It depends
not
on the subject.
Complaint.
Yeah.
I'm not going to admit that I'm ignorant on a subject that I'm not.
Oh, okay. Well, we all are. Well, Christopher, I'm not suggesting that you don't think you have all the answers and you understand everything the way you should. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's your attitude that I'm referring to that is my guilt. I'm just saying it out loud and admitting it. You're not. You don't know everything about everybody. And if you think you do, you're a candidate to be intolerant.
That's what I said. On the subject.
Oh, okay. I get what you're saying. Yeah, okay. So, so in other words, there are lots of subjects of which we all may know a lot about and some that we know nothing about.
Yeah, I'm not ignorant on the CFL, but thermal nuclear war, I'm not real big on.
Okay.
Okay, it's
now,
not my forte.
This is of importance to me because, you know, here, you know, in Canada and in the CFL, I always go back to this. Whenever there's a kind of discussion about racism and sports, I always think of the CFL as a leader in, and again, a part of my heritage being Canadian, of being tolerant of different races that we feel need our tolerance and help. You know what I mean? And it's great to see, you know, to remember the great things that the Canadian Football League did for black quarterbacks back in the day before the war, black running backs. You know, it makes me feel good about being Canadian, you know, and
we had Bobby Singh in there who was a true Indian
right.
from India, right? And
right.
we've had many natives or aboriginals playing in the CFL. I think that the CFL is a multicultural, multi-diversional organization and always has been, and we've been very – and I don't want to use the word tolerant because we're not tolerant. We're accepting.
Yeah, well,
we just accept everybody for who they are in the CFL,
and that's
who we are.
And I do agree with that. I wholly do agree with that, with what Chris is saying.
And even more so, and we go a step further, and we find groups of people that are so small that we feel they need to be considered almost as Canadian as Canadians, which is why we invented this new Canadian double word called non-import.
Yep.
So, you know, you get little places that don't have a lot of people. And they, what?
I don't know about that one.
What do you mean you don't know about that one? Why isn't it Canadians? The rule isn't a Canadian rule. It's a non-import rule. And not all non-imports are Canadian. Or you can argue that point with me, Christopher.
Not all non-imports are Canadians.
That's right.
Of course they are.
No, they're not.
Not all imports are American.
Not all of them.
No, no, no.
Then Cahoon,
the rules are very clear on what a non-import is. You don't have to be a Canadian citizen or born in Canada. You just have to have been living in Canada for 5 consecutive years before your 13th birthday or 7 consecutive years before your 18th birthday or something like that. I don't know them, but I can find it real fast if I need to.
Yeah, go ahead.
But you don't have to be a Canadian citizen.
The point is if you're a member of a small group, a small country, there's a few that just the fact that you're born there makes you a non-import.
What country? I'm sorry, I'm curious about
Jamaica,
what the agreement is.
Jamaica, Bermuda, they're non-imports. If you're born in Jamaica or Bermuda, you're a non-import.
No, that's not true.
Well, it's not true?
That's not true. No, that's not true.
Is it true or is it not true?
No, it's not. A player who was physically resident in Canada for an aggregate of 7 years prior to turning 15, or if he's a Canadian citizen, was physically resident in Canada for an aggregate period of 5 years prior to turning 18. Doesn't matter what country you came from. It doesn't matter what country you lived in. As long as you resided in Canada for 7 years before turning 15, or you are a Canadian citizen and were 5 years in Canada before turning 18. There's no exceptions for any particular country.
Am I mistaken about the fact there's been a couple of CFL players that have come from Jamaica or Bermuda and went to college or university in Canada, and they ended up becoming non-imports in that time? And that's after being 15. I must have spent a night in Mayor Ford's sister's basement. I'm sorry, I'm mistaken.
Well, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm just going to say I don't understand. That's not
but
according to the rule.
I'm willing to accept that I'm wrong about that. That's cool. I'm willing to accept that I'm wrong about that. But still, the point is I took it too far, and I apologize to anybody who was offended by me taking it too far. By my stupidity, of course. But by my stupidity, of course. And what I'd like to say is I still stick to the point that... Okay, ignorant. See, there it is. See, there's. I told you I was ignorant. Didn't I say that right at the beginning? See how ignorant I am? I'm not that ignorant that I don't know that I'm ignorant. Anyway... The thing of it is that I just it always every time something like this happens I think of how great a country we have, and how pleased I am to be a Canadian citizen, and how fortunate I feel that I was born here, and again then it reminds me of ironically my biggest beef is with the owner of the Boston Bruins who, being a Buffalo native, doesn't want a team in Hamilton because of his hometown will suffer if they get a team. And that, to me, is prejudice, and that's just as bad. But, you know, if you're prejudiced against a place like Canada, it's okay to do that. If we want a team, if we deserve a team, we don't get a team, and it's okay not to give it to us because we're Canadian. And that's another thing that this whole situation reminds me of. And I remember the last time Montreal played Toronto, and Andrew Ferentz flashed the finger at the camera, and it was rude, and I thought punishable, and he wasn't fined or anything, wasn't even given a limp wet noodle over the wrist. So, you know, Christopher, I have to admit, you just hit the nail on the head when you said it depends on what subject. It also depends on which subject of racism you talk about. It may or may not matter. As bad as things are for African Americans, there's other groups as well that have problems, but they don't have the political understanding that can rear its head, a very strong head. You know what I'm saying, Mike? Right? I hope I don't sound like I'm being a racist here. I just think that
sound like a racist.
Okay, you know, like there's a politics. I wish every race had the same kind of protection, the politically correct. I'm going to say two corrects, because there's politically correct, which is iffy, and then there's politically correct, which is the right thing. And that when somebody in the community says something as stupid as the NBA guy did, privately, admittedly, some woman who held a phone and recorded a conversation on the sly, which if the police did would be entrapment, but still, you know, we have to take serious what the guy said and what he did. It's nice that he was in his own home. Yeah, it's nice that the world sees things the way they appear to do, and I'm grateful for that. Go ahead, Chris. He was in his home, so is that a good or a bad thing?
I think a man is allowed to speak his mind in his own home, and his beliefs beliefs.
His rights
and,
are
and
not
for him to have, his wife or his girlfriend to have recorded him and then brought that public in it is disgusting. His comments are disgusting.
No, it's not.
Question.
No, it's
I don't
not.
Have a problem with that. What?
No, it's not disgusting. For some of the fact, his girlfriend was black and Mexican, and she took that man as an insult.
Right.
And she decided to record
it. So be it.
Right. But you know, if he felt that way about black people. Huh,
he shouldn't have a girlfriend. He shouldn't have a team. You know, It's hypocritical.
On his team is making him millions of dollars. I mean, you got the best point guard in the league on your team, which is black, and he's the only reason why the L.A. Clippers get fans in the stands.
There you go.
I know. It's an act of stupidity. This isn't ignorant.
Yes, it is.
This is stupid.
Yep.
Yeah, but you know, Christopher, you can't have someone in his position be that stupid, because he could hurt a lot of people, which he was doing. You know, he was investigated for basically the money he made from rental units, you know, from apartments and such. And he was accused of not wanting to rent to black people. And he was brought to court, and he settled out of court for millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't a guy that had a drink one night and then had another drink, and then he had too much to drink, and then he was coerced into saying something.
Racism isn't something that happens overnight. It's something that goes to the core of your being.
Exactly. You know, so as a CFL fan, and this does have a CFL, you know, again, this is why I celebrate being a CFL fan, because I hope and I believe that nobody in the CFL, has this kind of mentality, which I'm convinced they don't. Now, you can't guarantee that with new owners coming in and stuff. You know, and I am grateful, as I said, for the CFL. We had running backs that were black before any professional league quarterbacks, and if I'm not mistaken, coaches as well. We can go right to coaches where we've had coaches in the CFL were African American or of darker skin, of a different, you know, of a non-white, you know, type, if you will, which to me is laudable. It's another reason why the CFL is so far superior to any other league.
Yeah, Frank, I think Danny Barrett and Roy Shivers were the first head coach and GM that were of African American descent.
I hate to wave the red and white as I refer to myself.
Yep.
Hey, wave it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a red white.
I kind of like the red black because
now I can say the red white. But anyway, it's important. It's important to us here in the CFL right now because they're negotiating another season. They're talking about this is when stuff. You know, first we talk about ethnic background and social responsibility. Now we're going to turn our attention to financial responsibility. Does anybody have any word on this thing being settled in the next week? I suspect within 10 days to 2 weeks it'll be settled.
Well, the last I heard, and it was I'm thinking it was even Serge and myself that were talking. Is he still here or did he go away?
Yeah, he's here. He's here.
And it is basically the owners have said no. This is it. They've thrown down their gauntlet and they said it's not on the table. You guys either accept that or you don't.
But I've seen good things come from, you know, it's best that they get out all the angst right off the bat. You know, let's let them take their worst shots right away. That way they can each be in a daze, which I think they were in recently, and they can settle down and hearing what the other side wants, and adjust to the reality that they're not going to get what they came to the table for, either of them.
Well, I think the league can take the like whatever type of position they want, but the players still have the right to ask for arbitration. You know, they do have resources at their fingertips as far as fighting basically an uncompliant. I mean, they can, what do they call that when they, one side won't talk, an impasse?
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
The Players Association can then fight for some arbitration.
Yes. They can bring arbitration into it, but it won't get to that because that's a nasty precedent to set.
It won't be good for anybody.
Exactly. Nobody leaves happy if that happens.
No.
Well.
But you're right. That's the hammer over both the parties' heads.
You think
the
about
scenario
that.
Right, the scenario right now on this is that if they agree to what the players' demands are, it will put the Winnipeg franchise in bankruptcy.
What?
Yeah, because of their $4.5 million,
their leverage,
their bill,
their
leverage to the max. So because the teams don't share revenues, but the revenue is the same. Do you know what I'm saying? Saskatchewan makes more money than anybody else, but they don't share with everybody else. So although the TV revenues are shared equally between each team, but if we go on an amount of profit for the league based on each team, and it's that the amount is pooled together and averaged, then Winnipeg is below the average, and it will literally put them into bankruptcy, is the position that the league is taking, from my understanding. There's just not enough money there to
the
go
reason,
the way that the players
may
want
I
to.
Add to what you're saying, Christopher? Just
sure.
Look at it this way, that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers just bought a very expensive home, and
yep.
they're deep into deposit money.
Predators.
Never mind mortgage money. They're deep into deposit money for that house. And, it's very, very expensive. This is not the National Hockey League in the United States where, you know, cities and towns buy and spend money on arenas and then hand them over to the team. The team manages them. This is a situation where Winnipeg has gone on their own, literally, with the province and with the federal government, but not a lot of money came from either of those parties. They literally borrowed the money, and now they have to pay it back, if I'm not wrong. Kelly, you're good at this
stuff.
That's
correct.
Isn't that about it?
They're not on the hook for all of it, but,
a big chunk.
At the same time, they are on the hook for a portion of it, and I believe that portion is somewhere in the neighborhood of 25%.
There you go.
It's $4.5 million per year for the next 25 years or something like that.
What, that the Bombers or that the city and the province?
No, that is
the
Bombers. Actual Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Commitment
wow.
to this stadium right now is $4.5 million for the next 25 years. It's $3.5 million for one side of things and then $1 million a year for something else. And
They got to win.
They got to put people in the seats, right? But
yeah.
The players right now, currently, even with the deal and how lucrative this TV contract is and everything else, the formula would put the Bombers into bankruptcy.
But, Christopher, didn't we talk about this a long time ago, a couple of months ago, actually, when we started this? And this was my concern, because right now what we're treating the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as the canary, okay? They're not the canary. They're the opposite. They're the worst case scenario in the CFL right now. And it's handy and opportunistic for the league to point to that team because that team has the most, they're the ones that are worst off as far as their need for cash flow is concerned. But isn't that
correct.
A fair statement? You know what I mean? Like
yep.
One team at a time. Montreal isn't in that situation. They can make a profit with the TV revenue. Toronto could make a profit with the TV revenue. Not
a
lot.
All teams can, except for
exactly.
Winnipeg.
Exactly. Because of this deal that they struck. And it's handy
right.
for the commissioner to bring up this one when this one is a worst-case scenario by far and hide every other team behind this, when, in fact, I don't think it's fair to use this as – This is not the norm right now financially for the CFL franchises.
So is this safe?
I mean, how many stadiums do you have? What's going to happen in Regina? What's going to happen
Regina?
In Calgary?
Are you really going to worry about Regina?
No, I'm not. I'm just pointing it out in the aspect of things of everything that's going on. We're building new stadiums all over the place. Yes, Winnipeg did not get as good a deal as what Hamilton and Ottawa did.
Okay,
but
let
I'm
me try
sure
it a different
two
way.
Teams are both going to be on the hook for this.
Okay, but as much as what? As BC? How much of a hook is BC, the Lions, on what happened to their stadium when it was renovated and the fallout from the – okay. And that's my point, Christopher, is that Winnipeg is a bad case scenario, and I'm suspicious about how bad it is at this time.
Right.
Because
that
to
is,
me,
you know,
it's
my
kind of fishy.
If they're going to put a stadium up in Regina, man, Regina had nothing to worry about. Saskatchewan is going to make a project, so they're going to be well off. They're going to be well off. They don't have to worry about that. But now, with the Winnipeg situation, you know, if they're that close to bankruptcy, man, what is that going to say for the league? You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I don't think they're that close to bankruptcy. I'm just saying that if the new collective agreement goes into place the way that the players want it to be, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are no longer financially viable.
And if
you followed the commitment or the proposal of the owners or the league, the Winnipeg franchise still stays on solid grounds.
Right. So the players stay where they are and have no sharing in the growth of the league.
There's no sharing in the revenues of the league. Why don't they tie it to profits? Why do they need to tie it to revenues?
Well, sure they can. They can tie it to profits, Christopher.
They're not asking for that.
Do you guys remember what I suggested? And I suggested it for a reason because of something like Winnipeg. But the Winnipeg wasn't on my mind at the time because Winnipeg's financial statement didn't come out until after we had this conversation. You know, the players get 45%. The owners get 50%, and that 5% goes to either players and or helping. I forget the amount. I was considering the old players and also financial status of CFL teams, sort of a slush fund to help teams when they're in trouble. Well, it appears to me that there's a team in trouble, and I'm sure the CFL will do something to make sure that they get a return on that loan. And if 5% of the revenue went to Winnipeg over and above what they normally get, it would help them off the, you know, it would help them off the schneid. You know, I mean, the league owners have an obligation to themselves. I agree, Christopher. But they also have an obligation to be fair-minded and give the players something, you know, that's commensurate to the fact that more money's coming in the league. If there isn't that much money, and you're right that there is no profit, and they show there is no profit, I mean, the players can't ask for what isn't there. If you're right, you can't ask somebody for what isn't there. But let's find out if it's there first, and let's not use Winnipeg, which is a totally weird scenario, because I have yet to hear of a team that puts themselves in that kind of position. To me, it seems like they're asking for trouble. It's not a great deal for that team.
You're right.
You know, why should the players suffer because Winnipeg makes a bad deal?
And that's all that was a bad deal that Winnipeg got into, really a real bad deal, man.
That's not the players' fault.
But it's not
the other owners' fault either, but they can't use it to their advantage either and say, look at the dummies we have in our league. See how much Winnipeg isn't making? Oh, no, don't look at me. Mm-hmm. Don't look at me. Look at Winnipeg.
Yep. That is true.
Don't look at me. Look at Winnipeg.
But it's also reality.
Of course it is. Of course it can be, I should say. That's why when the players say open your books, the owner shouldn't say no. If they're gonna cry poor, show the players how poor you are.
Yep.
The players aren't gonna get money that isn't there, boys. You know,
then the CBA could be resolved quickly. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But don't claim poor if you're not willing to open your books. Because if you're poor and you're willing to open your books, you're telling the truth. If you're saying you're poor and you're not willing to open your books, why not? You've already suffered the insult and the shame that you can't turn a profit. What does it hurt to show the books now? What are the books going to show, that you're even dumber than you said you were?
Uh-huh.
No. Come on. Just open the books and let's move on. Let's get the players on the field. Let's talk about football like we're going to do right now. Any parting shots on like, did I overspeak?
I just got a message from Bruce John Inch, And he says that he's heard from two Rebel players. It's not good. They can see camp being postponed for sure or not even having one.
Yeah.
Oh.
So the players are digging in.
Oh, yeah, they're going to dig in.
No surprise here.
Know for sure, if they know for sure, if they believe there's money and they're being told there isn't any, they're going to dig in.
Uh-huh.
For sure.
They're not going to dig in if they don't think there's any money. Go ahead, Serge.
I was just reading Glenn Suter's article. I know it's a bit old, back to April 16, but he was mentioning a couple of things that everybody seems to agree that, you know, players should be paid more money. So that's one issue as to, you know, how that's going to happen. And the other being that the revenue sharing, how that's going to work. So there's those issues as well. So, you know, it's like...
I don't believe
in revenue sharing.
Serge, we had this conversation some months ago about the players wanting more money. See, the thing about it is if the players got a little bit more money, when the NFL come calling, CFL players would be saying no. They only go down there, man, so they can get on the practice squad, get that $450K, and going about their business. They're still in the practice roster 2 or 3 years to get the money. I mean, it's all about that financial stability. You know, people got family to take care of. And
it's all about
CFL,
getting paid.
It's all about getting paid. If the players were to get a little bit more money, believe me.
But that's what Suter was saying, that everybody seems to agree that the players deserve to be paid more. It's just a matter of how much more and who should be paid more. Should be the quarterback because he has the toughest job. Where does it go? So there's that whole issue, too, to work out, that if you decide that the players are going to be paid more, who's going to be paid more than how. So, anyways.
Yeah, the other thing, Serge, that they were talking about, I think, was it Glenn Suter that thought of that, or was it, no, it might have been the ex-Argo, Mr. NFL Argo.
Chris Schultz?
Yeah, he said maybe add a player to the roster with that extra money.
Yeah, see, so what do you do with that extra money?
Yeah, what do you do with that? But, you know, it also is tied to how much you get, right? I mean, if the league offers an extra, like what were they offering, an extra $400,000 or $300,000?
Well, they basically told them to work on your cap at 4.9.
Yeah,
which is 4.4,
which is
so
another
half a million
five.
Dollars.
Okay, yeah, $500,000, right?
Which is actually, yeah. Manasseh's online. He says his mic is muted.
No way.
That's what he just told me.
Hang on. Let me get. Oh, frig. He's on twice. My goodness.
I'm just relaying the messages. These people.
Oh, thank
why
you.
Do they all call, tell me? I don't know. But I've got all these. Got Bruce, Manasseh. Got everybody online
got
here
Bruce
talking to me.
I got him. He's in.
Okay.
Manasseh, you want to jump in? You want to weigh in?
Yeah, it's all this talk about with Winnipeg. I think some of it's being misrepresented. Like, Winnipeg actually easily affords their $4.5 million mortgage.
They have
the largest season ticket base in the league, more than Regina's. And they also have, they're really close to the Bombers, I mean, the Riders in merchandise sales as well. So financially, that's why they cut that deal. That was the only way they were going to get the stadium, by pretty much taking, I think, $90 million out of the $190 million cost of the stadium. And
oh my goodness!
The other big thing for why this is important, it goes beyond them. It goes to Halifax, and Halifax is trying to get a community-owned team. The only way that's going to happen is they're going to have to do the same thing the Bombers did, which is front like half the cost of the stadium and pay it off in a 30-year mortgage. So this CBA is huge as far as any potential expansion to the Maritimes. So that's the biggest. For me, like as a fan, all the things for the players aside, if you want a 10th team, the owners have to win the CBA flat out. If they don't, there won't be expansion in the CFL for years.
I don't agree. And here's why I
don't. I mean, they've already been on the record right now with the mayor. There's already a controversy.
I understand. I'm just offering an opinion that may involve a solution. One of the richest men in the world, one of the richest families in the world, are from the East Coast. I don't know if they still live there.
They're not buying the team, dude. People have gone through that whole thing of all these different cities across Canada, and they bring up all these families. They're not doing it because there's not a passion for it. If you were talking about maybe a hockey team, an NHL team, then they might consider it. But the fact of the matter is all these years, no one has stepped forward. And the only thing that's ever come forward now is the mayor saying, hey, we're willing to do the community-owned thing. If we can get, you know, people behind us and help support us in getting the stadium built, we could be open to that. That's the only option on the table right now that's been reported.
Is that the responsibility of the players, or is that the responsibility of the league, which includes the players, to assist in some financial manner the bringing in of another team, a 10th team, and that one, of course, completing the coast-to-coast theory that I like so much when it comes to the Canadian Football League? Is it the responsibility of the players alone?
Well, I mean, it gives more jobs to players. There's potentially, 40 more, 42 more jobs available.
You can't tell me that it's not going to help the profit line for the Canadian Football League to be able to actually say from coast to coast. That's
the
whole point.
The CFL should be trying to crush the player. If I'm the league office, we shouldn't give in on a single thing from the players. That's crazy. The league has been in a financial toilet for the last 30 years, and now they got an opportunity to be on solid ground and be in a strong place. You can't give in now. You've come too far, and they put in too much work to get to this point. Right now, this is the time the CFL needs to cash in. I'm sorry to the players, but at the end of the day, you know, most of these guys are replaceable outside of maybe three or four of them. And none of them have that big of a name brand where it matters.
Is Manasseh just talking? I think he just repeated everything I said about 3 weeks ago.
I've been reading all the details and what the players are saying. What they're offering is ridiculous. The owners are totally right. I'm on their side 100%. Just look at what's actually being negotiated. The players are demanding basically almost all the money that the CFL just gained from this new TV deal. And that's crazy. So if they're not even, if the players aren't even being reasonable on their side, and they're demanding these crazy demands,
it's a posture of negotiation, and as if you wouldn't ask for the high end on your own negotiation. Or the low end,
but I'm saying,
you're mortgaging a home. You know
but
what I mean?
CFL,
like, you,
why would you
there.
Give in at all? Like, for
well,
what?
Listen,
like,
we're
what,
just
what,
postulating
what do they have?
Anyway. What we're postulating is where we think it'll end up. And I agree with Kelly 1,000% that we're discussing where we think it should be. The players and owners are on opposite ends of the spectrum, like Kelly says. He's 100% right. Neither of those parties going to offer what they're hoping will happen. You know, it's like they say about meeting. We had site meetings. I always just say to the guys, a site meeting is a place where you go with what you want, and you hope you leave with what you need. You know, so. You know, that's what's got to happen. What we're hearing now is what they want. Both sides want.
Right.
We got to wait to see what they need, you know, to make it happen.
But the point
right?
is, do the players have any leverage at all in this negotiation?
Well, I think the leverage they have is that they have been good soldiers before.
Yep.
So
more
they don't
than
need
ever.
To become
more
generals. They
leverage.
Don't need to become generals, but, you know, maybe a little. And you know what, Kelly? If the league is offering an extra $500 million, you know, $500 million. My goodness, an extra $500,000. If they're offering an extra $500,000, in your mind, since you are like me, a little more on the player side on this issue for the same reason, we're on the same side, for the same reason. We think the players suffered through the last negotiation and really helped set up the CFL being in the position they are now. That when something good happens, they can actually think of making a profit. So there was, in a way, a sacrifice made by the players. So what would be a decent reward for them? The $500,000 is not enough?
No, I think more in the neighborhood of $750,000. But you know what? $500,000, if they had to settle, it wouldn't be too bad if the other terms were to their liking. And that's the working terms about practice hours and community hours. And, you know, if they maybe could set up some sort of a legacy fund for CFL vets, you know, somehow in the deal. And, you know, Frank, I just wanted to address the franchises thing as well. You always have this beautiful romantic idea that we can have a league from coast to coast. But, Frank, we have three coasts in Canada. Are you going to put a team in Nunavut?
No, stop. Come on. Let's
you know,
at least talk.
Well, we
you
do.
Know, the East Coast is not as densely populated as we wish it would be. You know, I mean, we're pushing it, putting a team there by population, you know. And from what I hear, the interest there in football isn't as strong as I would hope, you know. But
no.
in
put a team in Grand Prairie.
The most important negotiation, guys. The most important negotiation point, in my opinion, is not about money. It's about term. The league wants this to be a long, you know, an 8-year deal. The players much shorter.
For sure.
You know, the players for sure, if they're going to yield, right? If they're going to yield, I guarantee one thing: it's not going to be a long-term contract.
That's right.
But why
they're,
not?
They're not going to lose there.
Let's say the players did have a strike, if you're the owners and you're the CFL team, I mean, the vast majority of these guys, nobody knows them. Most fans barely even know their own rosters, let alone their star players. I mean, I would say go ahead and strike. I'll re-sign the entire roster.
I beg to differ, Manasse. You're a typical CFL fan, and you're not even Canadian. And typical CFL fans are fanatical. We're fanatical. CFL fans, we love our teams. We go to practices like Bruce John Inch. Christopher Jones has green.
Frank, let me give you a perfect example. Can you name me two of your starting defensive backs from last season?
They play for Hamilton right now.
No, they don't. You had Pat Watkins and Jaleel Carter, right?
Yeah.
That's
you're
going to
ask me this question, please.
Who are your two starting defensive ends
in the
East Final?
No, but you're going.
That's my point. You only know most fans only know five key players, as they should. There's five players that usually matter: Ray, Owens, Kackert, and everyone else is really people really don't really care.
Manasse, I think you're turning it upside down. You know, there are some, I don't think that's true. But you know what? The problem I have and the problem fans have with a strike is that it pisses me off if you strike. You can talk about if I know the players bring in. I don't like the idea. It's like when you buy something. If you think it isn't what it says on the label, you don't have to know what it is other than what it was. It's enough that you know
what
you're buying.
We're talking about the player striking and the owners getting replacements, because that's what's going
to
happen.
But you seem to think that all that matters is the names on the back. If we recognize the names on the back.
But I'm just saying
the
majority of fans, aren't they still going to support the league?
But would Ray go with them on strike, or would he stay?
Obviously, he's going to go on strike. He's one of the bigger names.
Would Kackert stay?
That's my point, Frank, is let's just say they did, the players go on strike, right, and the owners get replacement guys for all of them. Would you go to an Argo game next year with replacement players?
Well, I hope I'd have the choice to get a total refund or decide to go. That's my point. And fans, we're people, you know. We get irritated, even though, you know, football players are underpaid by sports standards. Athletes get paid a freaking hell of a lot of money. And even by their standards, there are a lot of people in this world, Manasse, who don't earn $50,000 a year, who'd be very happy.
Sure, CFL players get paid, I think, a fair deal, considering what they generate. It's all about the league's popularity. So NFL, NBA, NHL players, they get paid a lot more because their leagues are more popular and they generate more money. Thus, they deserve it.
But the CFL guys make the proper money
in proportion.
I bet you. Okay, look. Even here, there's six of you in. Let's do a little. Who would be willing to go to a game with replacement players? Chris, Christopher.
Well, sure. Why not?
Okay, but that would. That would be a change then, because you don't go now. Okay, now...
tickets.
Okay.
What are you talking about? I got two tickets.
I'm pulling your leg. Okay, so there's one for... I'll go. Kelly, would you go with replacement players?
Yeah, but I don't know why we're talking about this.
I don't either.
Yeah, you don't want to talk about it either, do you?
Not really.
Right. And that's my point. Would I go? I don't know. Who else? Manasse, you'd obviously go, right? if they were a replacement player. Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still watching, right? Yeah, well, of course.
Mr. Townsend, would you go if there were replacement players? Does
of
it
course.
Change your...
No, no, it wouldn't change me. I'd go for the fact, hey, I might see one of my indoor homeboys out there slinging that rock around. So, hey, I'll go.
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
And then I'll ask you another question, guys. If your wife cheated on you, would you forgive her?
See that?
Yep.
Is that? I don't get what's your
I don't know. I don't understand the relevancy to that, and I'm not going to answer this.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I don't understand either.
You don't understand it? Well, if someone someone did something wrong to you, if someone did something wrong to you, so what you're saying is this is the right thing to do for the CFL to replace the players. Then you also not only would you go, you agree with replacement players being used. Do you feel that that's
they find replacement players? I mean, Canadian, is there enough? Players
it would be
out
hard.
The Canadian part might be hard, but I mean, they may make an exception. But at the end of the day, all of us are more loyal to our teams than any player. That's why when a player switches teams, you don't still root for the guy. Like, let's say Ricky Ray all of a sudden went to Hamilton and became a Tiger Cat. You're going to tell me, Frank, you're going to root for him the same way you did when he was in Argo?
Oh, absolutely not. You're right. No, but you're right
that's
about
the point.
No,
that's what the owners are banking on.
But that but
Bruce,
is
got,
trying
Bruce
to...
has got some comments here that I'd like to share with you guys, okay? First off, he says that he would go. And he says, in fact, he would play. But if the woman's cheating on him, he's going to find a body bag.
Guys,
he didn't
I want to make a point here. Rather than talking about this, check this out. I just opened my deck, and there's three fellas out here chucking the rock around. I mean... How great is that?
You guys still have snow?
No. No, it's pretty much cleared up. But, you know, springtime in Saskatchewan, I mean, we bring our footballs out and we throw them around.
Wow. Well,
but
I'm
going to say something. Oh, go ahead, Frank. I'm sorry.
No. You go ahead, Mike.
No, what I was about to say is with if the players decide to go on strike, if the owners did get replacement players, believe me, the regular players that's on strike ain't going to strike long. They're going to sign that deal that the owners put on the table for them the first time because they're going to be without a work. And when you're without a work, you're without a check.
CFL
that's
players
my whole
cannot
point.
Afford
have,
to go on
they
strike.
Have no, the players have absolutely no leverage, and the owners know that.
No
so
leverage
you do
at
that,
all.
It would just be stupid on the owner's part to give in on anything. I mean, I would call their – if I'm the owners, I'm calling the players on their bluff, and I'm saying, if you don't take this deal, go ahead and strike, and we'll just wait for you in about a month, and you're going to come right back to us. That's what's going to happen.
Wow.
I mean, there's no other scenario. They would be stupid on their part, too. I mean, they just cashed in for the first time in God knows how long. I mean, they're not going to give that up now.
But what do you do? What do you do if Manasseh, if you're right about – the Winnipeg thing. What do you do if you're a player and your commissioner told you the exact opposite, that Winnipeg, hard done by, they're in the hole, they're in trouble, we can't afford to pay you because of that? Yes, he did.
I haven't.
You know what? I think the commissioner is going to go with the owner.
He said Winnipeg. He said Winnipeg was, he clearly said that it's hard for them to give the players money when Winnipeg is in, you know, teams like Winnipeg. I think those were his exact
words. Right, I mean,
Winnipeg.
Come on, Frank. He's playing politics to a degree, and we have to know that in the day he works for the owners.
I know that,
so,
but who loves politics used against them? Who loves it? I know I don't. I don't like politics used against me. I'm putting myself in the players' position in this situation. They're a pretty lonely bunch right now. They're a pretty lonely bunch right now because – I'm not on their side. I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate here because I get a sense for what the room's like, and if we all start saying the same thing, you know, it's going to be pretty boring here. The bottom line is everybody has to make money. Everybody has to make money. Nobody should be the one to make money and say I got to make money and you can't make money for me to make enough. That's all. That's
where
I stand.
But I'm saying, like, think about what these guys are getting in the CFL, man. For guys who couldn't cut in the NFL, on average, you're getting $80,000. That's not counting bonuses. If your team wins the Grey Cup like the Riders did, each player in that team got $24,000 in bonuses with playoff and Grey Cup money. And for guys who otherwise there's no other option, you can't complain. I mean, come on.
No,
at the end of the day,
pretty much everybody on the Riders made over 100 G's, like Manasseh is saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Playing,
you know?
And they're playing a game. I mean, at the end of the day, with
Manasseh,
perspective, these guys aren't going to war. They're playing a game on a field, throwing a football around. I mean, it's not like they're doing something huge. You know,
well,
so
then what you can, you know, Manasseh, what you've convinced me of, if and when the players come crawling back to the league, if they've put themselves in a position where they're out, I'm not going to feel sorry for them.
No. Yeah, why would you?
Sure.
I don't see
that's
any
all.
Reason any of us should
hey.
Be. I mean,
and
they chose to play
right,
a game, and they're getting paid to play a game, flat out. I mean, which one of us would love to trade in our day job to go play football for a living?
I would love.
I mean, so really, I find it hard to when people say.
A one condition is there? Is there a position where you don't get hit?
Yeah.
Kicker.
You got the kicker, right?
Take a gross
quarterback.
No,
ask Christopher, quarterback in Montreal for the last 10-15 years.
hey, but you know what, Frank? No, really.
Exactly.
On the season. Now, I'm not saying that. CFL owners will do replacement players, but don't think that they wouldn't put it in mind if these guys decide they want to go on strike. You know what I mean? Because it's first time for everything. They did it in the NFL.
We'll make it real.
And when they brought the replacement players in the NFL, Manasseh, how quick did them players sign that deal when them replacement players played? They signed
right,
it quick,
like,
didn't they?
Right. 3 weeks and it was done.
And to add to that, when replacement players were playing in the NFL, the stadiums were still packed.
Yep.
It was not
and
a shortage
of things. And the ratings were still high.
I remember that. Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
So
then
how come
it didn't work that way
right
with
now,
the referees? Yeah. How come it didn't work that way with the referees?
Totally
different.
Come on. It
probably
matter.
Because they're that right. underpaid. The referees are that underpaid. Okay.
Right.
So you guys, all right, you know, hey, look, I love the CFL, and I'm a working stiff, or at least I grew up being a working stiff, so I have difficulty. I've never had aspirations of owning a team, so, you know, understanding the management side, I'm guilty of not really understanding it, not as well as Christopher, for sure. And obviously,
can I leave a little bit of a scenario here? I want to try to figure something out here. Manasseh, what kind of restaurant do you have? Is it an
like
extreme high-end restaurant, or is it?
No, not really.
Not,
it'd be like in between.
Okay,
paper
you know.
Towels
but
or
you are, you are a restaurateur, and you understand the concept of this. There are restaurants out there who basically are they're successful because of their chef.
Yeah.
People come there because their chef is awesome. You agree?
Yeah.
There are restaurants like that. Is that chef's wages because that's the draw to everybody that comes in there. He's being paid well, but would you believe that his wages are ever tied to the profits of that restaurant?
No, never.
Never.
Yeah.
But he is the reason why the restaurant's successful. No different than the
right.
players are the reason why the fans come to the stadium, but their wages should never be tied to the profits or the revenues of the team. It's
yeah,
not
I
done
agree.
In any other business.
Yeah,
and
no,
the
I agree.
Place,
I know,
you know
point,
Christopher,
that,
I disagree because now you see we're gonna end up going beyond football because that's
we're
just
go to basketball,
out,
baseball,
that's,
and all the other stupid
out,
sports out there who have already conceded to this, which is stupid. And so why should the CFL follow them
okay,
off the side of the bridge?
Christopher, can I tell you why I disagree with you? There are corporate executives whose pay is tied to a percentage of the profits.
Well,
what,
yeah, I'm sure
different?
That there are the presidents
so
of the
why can't,
BC
well,
Lions
why,
is tied
he's
to profit.
A player in the company. He's a player in the company. Why does he
management.
Get to tie his – you can call him management all you want, but he's a player because the owners of the company are the board. And the board are the one that hire these guys, just like a GM, just like a coach, just like a player. Bottom line is – the deal you get is the one you make, and the players are trying to make a deal that's good for them. So you can't
use. Well, you know, Frank, to your point isn't quite accurate because it has to do with a bonus tied into achieving a certain goal. Like, let's say they need to get a certain amount in the year. That's no different than what the players get when they
well,
win the Grey Cup.
It's
a bonus.
There are management people who get a percentage of the company. There's even much like what happened with Mario Lemieux in hockey. You know, there's companies that are started and people get together, and one of them is the money and the other is the brains, and they come together and they share. You know, all I'm trying to say is this, is that at some point you're going to strike a deal, whether it be a corporate CEO, whether it be even me when I show up and meet the guy who's going to be my supervisor. There's a negotiation point. There's a price point that you reach. That's all we're talking about here. So you can't really use – there is no – it's all part of the menu, what you're offering, Christopher. What you're offering, Manasseh, is all part of the menu that this,
okay.
this situation you can pick from. You know, it's a way to make a decision. But don't tell me the players shouldn't ask for a percentage. They have a right to ask for it. It's up to the owners to agree. That's what the, you know. It's all about negotiation.
Just a quick question around the loan.
They can ask for shares
if
they want. They're not just not going to get them.
Right.
Yeah. If they don't get them.
How many of you guys here? How many guys actually own a business? Like, how many of you guys own operate a business?
I have owned and operated. Yep.
I used to. I got out of it.
You run the trucking thing, right? Is Mike gone?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, you own your own business, right?
He does. Not no more. I did own my own business with the trucking thing, but
okay.
You know, it's a hit and miss with some of these businesses.
Right. But the only reason I ask is because then most of you understand the whole process of, you know, when you start your business up, the different hurdles you have to overcome. And let's say you achieve a certain amount of success after a certain amount of time, and you finally come in. And let's say your employees all of a sudden come to you, and they see the increase, you know, in profits, and they see the business picking up, and they come to you and they say, well, you know, now we want a higher percentage of that. Like, how many of you are going to look at them and say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do it? No, you would just say, either take what I'm giving you, or you can just hit the road and I'm just get somebody else.
We'd make a determination based on our.
No.
We'd make a decision based
on
our financial.
On what is realistic?
Right. I mean, you know, if they come to. Right.
Guys, you're making me cross-eyed. Comparing this to a business, Manasseh, is so silly. It's ridiculous because I have yet to go into a city. No.
The only reason I'm saying this, Frank, is so we can understand the owner's perspective, and we can see it from their perspective as well.
Perspective, but please don't refer to this as a normal business. It is not a normal business because as yet I have not seen one Tim Hortons in Toronto. I see hundreds and thousands of them. Whether you name whatever business there is, the only businesses that come close to football and sports are here in Canada, cable companies and phone companies. But they still have competition, direct competition. In football, in hockey, in basketball, there is no direct competition. They are monopolies. So please, don't talk to me like
these are monopolies.
They're monopolies.
Who competes with the
Maple Leafs?
But that doesn't mean...
Who competes with the Argos?
The Argos, the Raptors.
No, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
FC.
Are you telling me the Blue Jays?
Those are people
on.
Who compete against the Maple Leafs.
Okay, so Frank, the thing you're missing is the only reason players can get paid the amount of money they did is because all these leagues consolidate into one, you know, large. If there was like 10 different versions of football leagues in America, these guys wouldn't be getting paid the kind of money they're getting paid because the money
and
all
the
revenue, all the TV revenue would be split up.
There are lots
right.
of leagues. Come on.
It goes hand in hand, Frank.
Member,
the only reason they can make the money
group.
They're making
I'm a member
is
of
because
a group
there's one
Chris
single
moderates.
League.
I'm a member of a group that Chris moderates, and Mike, I don't know if Mike moderates it, but he's a part of it. You got that CFL, IFL. How many different football leagues are there?
Those are indoor leagues or arena leagues, and there's a plethora of them.
The CFL decides to
the
team.
With them leagues, a lot of them guys either have played in the CFL or go to the CFL. And like Adrian McPherson, it was a business for him. That's the reason why he went to the AFL anyway, because they offered him the bread. That man made over $100,000 playing arena league last year and would have stayed. But hey, he got a better offer in Calgary. So I agree with Chris and Manasseh to the standpoint it's a business. It is a business.
You know, you can look at the NBA and the ABA.
That was
the only two times you had two comparable leagues that were making the same amount of money, and they basically said we can merge together. And the players looked at it and thought, they're going to become a monopoly.
But their salaries went up because all the revenue combined. Why did the AFL and the NFL merge together? Why did they do it? The goodness of their heart?
No, to make more money. That's the whole point.
Exactly.
And everybody made
and
more
how
money.
Are they
the players made
more
money and the owners.
And how are they going to make more money? They were going to control football, professional football in North America.
Right.
That's the monopoly.
Yeah, but that's the point. That's the only way these players are going to make the type of salaries they do is in that circumstance. There's no other circumstance they can make
that
same amount of money.
But all I was saying, and I'll stick to what I said before, it is not a normal business. It is not a business that's fraught with the kind of competition that other businesses are. They're insulated. That's why they have, in the United States, God bless the United States, they have antitrust laws. Why do you think they have antitrust laws for sports? Why do you think they do that in the U.S.? They don't have antitrust laws for people who make bacon or sell phones, but they have it for sports. Why is that? Ask yourself why they do that. Huh?
So those in power don't exploit the employees. Right, that's the whole point.
And because they're the customers. Because they want to make sure there's no fix-in. Because they wield a lot of power. You know, it's the same reason why in Canada we have wheat boards, we have, Kelly could talk to that better than I can, but you know, there's reasons why companies get treated differently and organizations get treated differently. There's inherent problems that are specific to that type of organization, and sports is one of them. Now, I'm not here trying to be overly sympathetic anyway. The players are employees, granted. The owners are businesses, but they're not regular businesses. These are people who run a monopoly. They have a license to print my city's name on their jersey.
Frank?
Yeah, again, it comes to politically how you view economics too, Frank, because if you have more of a conservative view and you favor, you know, the one who's the owners or, say, the investors, then you kind of understand the league model. Like, I agree with that. Because you're not thinking about the investment that's being done by the owners. Like, take the new owners
of
Calgary. Calgary Farms Ownership Group, they just put in $15 million to upgrade McMahon. Now, they're putting that money in with hoping that they're going to get a good CBA with this TV deal and get some money back off it. Otherwise, they're not making that investment in the first place. So you got to look at both
ways,
personally,
I think it runs...
You're not thinking about the people making
ways.
The risk.
No. Let me say this. Let me say this, and I want you guys to talk. But all I'm saying is open the book, show us how poor you are, and then we'll get to the truth, and we'll go, okay, players, this is a league that's run on a shoestring. Just because now all of a sudden we got some money that we can put into the league to reinvest, we need to reinvest this and also take care of some debt. All they have to show is that there's debt. Just show the players there's debt. Let's move on.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, it's none of their business. That's crazy, man.
It's none of their business.
If my employees did that to me and they're asking me, I need to show them, you know, all my numbers so that they can be comfortable with what I'm paying them. That's crazy. I'm running my business. I'm the one making the investment, taking the risk.
I would fire every single one of them on the spot.
Okay.
Right. So that's just bad business. We're in business to make money, not to break even.
Would you come out and blatantly not tell the truth and feel that you have a right to?
No, I would just tell them I have no obligation
to
show that
to
them. If I want to, I can show them, but there's no obligation.
Tell the truth, but you don't got to lie either. You know,
right.
But you don't have to show them
the
books.
Define the truth.
You don't have to show them the books. Yeah.
Like,
okay.
If I were the owners, why don't the owners just be upfront, let them know, even if they are making money, and say, so what? Now what are you going to do about it? I don't know why the owners are even playing with these kid gloves.
Exactly. Now you're getting to what bothers me. But
they're trying to play Joe Cool in the media so that the fans don't get upset. But in all honesty, I bet you in that negotiation room, they take the gloves off and they let them know what's the deal. And that's why the players are so upset, because they know they're down and there's no way there's no comeback coming. It's game over from the very beginning. It was like the Grey Cup.
It really is.
Just like the same way the Riders took the Ticats to the shed. It's already done, man. By the first quarter, it's game over. Let's get the trophy out. You know, it's done, man. And then there's no contest.
Right.
So I don't know why. The players are the ones holding it up. That's all.
The
Right. If the players, and like I said, if the players do decide they want to go on strike, so be it. The NFL experimented with Plan B players. The CFL can do it too, and they would not skip a beat. Trust me.
Wow.
You might say they're Plan B players but no, that's just a side joke. Anyway, you kind of got
Here's where I'm having a problem with these negotiations here. This is where I'm having an issue with it. If the players turned around and said, we want the salary cap to go up X amount of dollars this year and next year and the year after, and the league then turns around and says, okay, I'll agree with that. And because that's what they should be negotiating right now, is their wages, their salaries going up. But it should not be fluctuation on a revenue scale. They don't have a right to do that. Okay? It's not their business. It's none of their business. They're the players. They're the employees. I'm making $4.4 million this year. I want to make $4.6 million this year coming up, and I want to make $4.8 the next year. The owners have already conceded a $500,000 raise to the cap. They said negotiate the free agency the way if it was at $4.9 million. The players should just be happy. They should be jumping up and down and doing backflips for that. That's the greatest raise to this cap we've had in seven years.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great deal.
They should be ecstatic and say, oh, my God, this is awesome.
Yep. Like I said, just stay tuned, because if they go to Plan B players, they're going to do it. Trust me. The owner's not going to miss a beat.
You won't have guys
that's going to come up and play for that money and be happy to play in the Canadian Football League, as we see it with the guys that we interview week by week. So
week by week, everybody will come up here, and they'll work for half the money.
Right. Yep. And if you look at the numbers, like the increase in revenue basically is giving each team about $2.3 million in additional revenue. So $500,000, that's what, if my math is not mistaken, it's just under 25%, right? It's almost a quarter of the increase.
Yep, almost a quarter.
That's a fair deal, man. I mean, if that was me in my that position, I wouldn't even let it be more than 10%. I'd be like, what? Why would I give you 25? So that's a great deal from what I see. I don't know. They're just being, hard-headed, and they're just trying to take these guys. But it's because they're players. They're competitors. They like competing. They have that pride issue, and that's the only reason why we're at where we're at. If they were logical and reasonable, they would know there's no negotiation at all to be done. You know? They would take the deal and be happy and move on. But they got pride and they're competitive.
The problem is that their players are not businessmen. They don't understand the concept behind it. And their player reps are not telling them the truth, or they're telling them whatever they want to get them riled up, to get them into the position to dig in. They're not business people. Most of these guys graduated from college? I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them couldn't have passed the first year.
Right.
I'm not dissing them in any way, shape, or form.
That's true.
Let's just read some reality. They're not business people. They didn't take business majors. Some of them did. Some of them understand this. And hopefully that they will be able to talk reason amongst everybody. But, when you get a player rep or the Players Association starts going rah, 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 and the stupid mentality, mentality that we get out of these players, it's not going to be good for anybody.
Exactly.
Well, first of all, Scott Flory is a business graduate from U of S, so he is a businessman. But I do agree on the whole with everybody saying, players deserve something, but maybe not the moon. Now, the main thing is there's some really good people in this negotiation, like whether or not they're fighting and stuff in the boardroom, but these are people with hearts. What needs to happen is something sustainable for the league over the next 5 years, and that includes the scenario in Winnipeg. I mean, we need a healthy league, and the players, I think, understand that. I don't think Flory is above that. So we'll see. I mean, there's time, guys. There's time.
Well, they did hire a hawk, right? Is it not a fair statement that they hired a hawk?
Oh, they did.
Yep.
He's, I don't want to curse or anything, but you can imagine he's all of them.
Okay. These guys could be sitting down in the negotiations room and saying, we're already agreed on all of this. Let's just put on a show for everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
That's probably what it is. And again, like if I were them, they should hire a lawyer and accountant to handle this and financial guys, like people who really can negotiate a good deal and not.
Well,
play
you
this,
know that they're part of the
know,
team,
this,
and I say,
who can, who's got the biggest ball game with this negotiation?
You don't know who their team is, though.
Don't kid yourself. Okay. They probably have people in that regard. But you know what? Bottom line here is the thing of it for me is that this there's no skin off my nose. Quite honestly, this is just a banter on my part. I mean, I'm not gonna buy an extra beer if the players win or if the owners win. I'm still gonna buy the same amount of beer I always buy at the game, right? So it really doesn't affect me. It really doesn't affect me. But I just wanted to have a little conversation, get a sense, and try to learn something. And I got to admit, I have less sympathy now for the players than I did before we started the show. And I don't know if that's a good sign for the players. I'll leave it there, I guess.
It's a reality.
Yeah,
it really is. I was about to say that. It's a reality.
There you
reality.
Go. Okay. Let's move on.
That's it.
Have we had enough about talking about this one? Let's talk about something else.
Yes.
Right now, we're starting to hear team by team, you know, you're getting the promotional statements from GMs and coaches and players, you know. But if you read between the lines, it's come buy season tickets or come buy tickets to the game because everything's wonderful. You know, all you have to do is go to CFL.ca or even TSN's website, and you'll hear how happy everybody is about the players in camp, how happy they are about rookies, how happy they are about, the management team they've got together. They all have a bright outlook. The future looks great. You want to go team by team and you know.
I can start.
Good.
Because we had actually the team organized a party today. Which was one of the reasons I want to come on the show. They organized this 5 to 7, like the whole. We got players, we got cheerleaders, they announced. I didn't know. I just found out today that Mark Trestman will be making an appearance July 11th against the Bombers to be honored. And we're all supposed to be wearing white that day. I'm not exactly sure why, but it's like the white games. That's
all right.
Day. And
party.
The AC will be honored October 13th, so it had to be on the 13th.
Awesome.
I'm assuming his number will be retired, it hasn't been really announced, but it's going to be
honored. Serge, there are numbers retired, right?
Well, we're still waiting for Cahoon. Yeah, there are, but it's been like 9 years. Mike Pringle was the last one, so I don't know.
Maybe they'll bring Cahoon in and do it together.
Hopefully when he gets inducted in the Hall of Fame, September 21st, the game's in Montreal, maybe they can do that. That'd be nice. But
Yeah.
And, yep, so, and they announced how, the stadium and everything. So it's looking good for this year. It was a really good party. We got to see Troy Smith and a few other players. Got to shake John Bowman's hand and all that. So it was a great. It was the first time they ever did something like this, and I thought it was a great idea. So it was a great fun.
Awesome.
I want to say, as Christopher mentioned, Bruce John Inch is. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday, buddy! And Phyllis Babin's there packing with them, so they're having a great old time. And what? I was already going to do that. I just noticed. I did it already. Happy birthday. And Phyllis is listening in as well. They're having themselves a good time packing. They're going to Myrtle Beach tomorrow, the rats. And I hope they have a lot of fun. And I had a lot of fun there with my wife last month. It was fun. So Montreal has talked about stuff as far as celebrations are concerned. But was there anything, any indication of how happy they are with the new players they're bringing in, are they?
One of the new coaches who, interestingly, before he was selected, in my mind, I felt like, because we needed, you know, a French-speaking coach on the team, and they chose André Bolduc, who was a former player, special teams with the Alouettes, and the head coach in Sherbrooke. And he said a few words because they were asking, you know, is this team in transition? Somebody asked the question. And what he said, based on the camp in Orlando, that this team looks anything but a team in transition. But personally, I was thinking that, you know, in the CFL, I don't know if there really is such a thing as transition, because it seems like each year you know, every team has a, you know, equal shot, although, you know, maybe it applies to the Bombers. but he likes the look of his team, and there's a lot of they're praising Ocho Cinco, even though it hasn't really been confirmed yet that he's allowed to play here yet. And we got a video speech from Jim Popp, who's growing a goatee again, and a nice one, I gotta say. And so it was really like a big, they were
promotional tour,
real promotional, like real pushing it. And they even were serving some new foods, kind of fancy stuff that they're gonna be serving at the stadium, some pulled pork and turkey with Alouette's special recipe. This is like the team. This is their own special recipe for the turkey that we they're with pizza now. They have fresh pizza because we were eating this cold crap before. So it's like it's fresh, made on spot pizza, and now Budweiser is a new beer thing. So the whole new party zone in the west end, end zone is going to be great. So it was really positive from every standpoint. So there was not
And that's a good thing.
Surge, did they say when the 85 jersey going to be when the 85 jersey going on sale?
85 jersey.
Buy them right now. They have it with his Johnson. They have it with Ocho Cinco, and they have it with the French version with.
Well, because they got to confirm it first, but
they don't have to confirm nothing, Serge, to sell the sweaters.
Yeah, they had them on their Twitter account. They already debuted them. Like
they don't have to. They don't have to confirm it.
I can check on the website see if they've started, but we'll have to take a look.
It ain't gonna be no problem. He's gonna play. He's gonna play. So it ain't gonna be no problem.
So, I could ask you real quick. Was Mark Waitman at the? Was he there?
Was the one actually giving the conference before? Yeah, he was pretty much presenting everything.
Did he run through all the new stuff they're going to do as far as improving the whole game day experience at the stadium?
Absolutely. It was a
new
perfect
food
presentation. It was like there were screens. Okay. And they were going step by step. I mean, this was one. You know, this was nice. We really enjoyed it, and it was a very good. This guy he's perfect. He was a perfect pick to be president. Although he needed a couple of years to kind of get in because he was kind of always a guy. He's been there since the start. Only him and Jim Popp from the Stallions era, but he was always kind of in the background. But he was, you know, pretty much doing everything. We just never knew about it. Now he's in the forefront, so, you know, now he's more comfortable and he's doing what he's always doing. It's just now we know who he is. So.
Serge, do you buy into the team not being a team in transition?
Oh, yeah, definitely. This team is gonna, you know, I don't expect them to win a cup, maybe not even reach a cup, but they're going to make it really hard on every other team. They're going to make every other team, you know, it's going to be tough for any other team to try and beat them. So, I mean, if you're going to beat them, you got to really earn it. So that's the way
I see it. Do you feel like you have the most talented team in the East Division right now?
I feel like this team maybe is kind of bits and pieces. Like maybe, you know, we got a lot of former players returning. Larry Taylor, Dave Stella. So I feel like there's a lot of pieces, and individually it's interesting, but it's a matter of how this team, maybe chemistry-wise, I don't know if in the beginning of the year it's going to gel right away or it's going to take some time. That's the only issue I have. But, you know, if you got Ocho Cinco and Richardson and Green and receivers, and we know Troy Smith can play, and we got running back. So we have all the pieces. It's just a matter of, you know, is it going to take time to fit, or is Higgins going to manage to put it all together right away? So,
well, that's who wants more than that? I mean, they're offering lots of hope, and you don't sound like you're without hope. And I think that's what they do every year.
They do a lot of things. It's just that last year it didn't work out for the first time. Okay, you know, a burp through. But, you know, this year I think it's definitely going to be better and it's going to be more encouraging. So, you know, it's just a matter of, I think Montreal will be talented. It's really the other teams have to, you know, they have to match or they have to step up in order to. And we've been spoiled in that respect since their arrival, that every year we've always managed to be competitive, and that's the best you can ask for.
Perfect. Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to let the guys talk about Montreal. We'll see what everybody else's opinion is about Montreal. White Ribbon Campaign, we talked about it. This is
Todd Meinerson, Executive Director of the White Ribbon Campaign. Congratulations on the connection with the Toronto Argonauts. Please explain for my listeners what your program's all about.
Sure, thanks, Frank. We're working with the Argos and through the funding of Status of Women to do add some work around gender-based violence and violence against women and girls to the already incredibly successful Huddle Up program that the Toronto Argonauts have run for the past 12 years. And our plan is to be able to talk to young men and boys in schools about healthy relationships with women, gender equality, respect, preventing violence, giving boys the space to ask those questions and to figure those things out so that they set themselves on a path for the future that's going to be violence-free and respectful to all people.
My biggest issue with violence, whether it's against women, men, boys, girls, doesn't matter, is secrecy.
That's
right. Seems to be the biggest hurdle that a person has to overcome before the good things can start to happen or the bad things can stop.
Yeah, I think you're right on. I mean, one of the things, the core elements of our pledge at White Ribbon is to never commit, condone, or remain silent about violence against women. That means speaking up about it. That means speaking up if you've experienced it. That means breaking that stigma around that we don't talk about it, that it doesn't happen. And that's the way that we can get boys to do stuff about it, because when they see it happening, they speak up. It doesn't become acceptable anymore. It doesn't become tolerable. And that's a huge part of the work that's going to happen.
I guess another question is, sometimes people think something's funny because it's happening to someone else. Should we check when we see an interaction between people, whether it be boys and girls, men and women, children and adults, and people see something that isn't right but think it's funny, should people diagnose what if it's really funny for everyone?
Right, right. Humor often is like a coping mechanism for what we do when we don't know how to intervene or be a bystander in a situation. And it's also a way to kind of mask the seriousness by the perpetrator. Oh, we're just joking. It was only just in fun. But when we teach young men and women that, no, it's not fun, it hurts people, it has an impact, and here's some things that you can do to intervene and say it's not funny, it can have a huge impact. Like, I play hockey, I'm in my locker room, I just started this job at White Ribbon. A guy makes an inappropriate joke about rape, about a woman. I'm like, I got to say something, but I'm terrified. And I could feel the redness coming up from my toes, and I didn't want to kick off the team or get ostracized by these guys. I said something eloquent like, hey, that's not very funny. I hid my head. The joke stopped, but the more interesting thing that happened afterwards was three guys after the game approached me in the parking lot and said, I'm glad you said something, because I didn't think it was funny either, but I didn't know what to say.
Now, just as many would say, who the heck do you think you are?
Yeah.
So that's the problem. But the important thing is the three that acknowledged it. It's a building process, isn't it? Foundation. It's foundational.
And I think more and more we uncover that there are guys that are uncomfortable with that, and when somebody speaks out, tells them that it's okay to do that, shows them that it's a way that's not as threatening, and it sets a new tone, a new norm in that group.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to
me. You got it.
Mr. Meinerson, White Ribbon Campaign, Toronto Argonauts, a great connection, and I'm happy for you. This must be a wonderful day.
Thanks very much. Come back and check with us when we got the program up and running, and we'll tell you how it's going.
Well,
We should all be sensitive to other people's pain. It's just hard to do it sometimes because to live in someone's skin, and I don't mean that in a racial way. I mean as an individual and another individual. It's hard to understand what it's like. You don't really feel what the pain that other people feel. So sensitivity is a real good thing, and that's why at the beginning of the show I said it's important that society reacted the way they did about the NBA owner. Mr. Sterling misspoke, shouldn't have spoken the way he did, and now he understands that he shouldn't think that way either. So, okay, so the Montreal Alouettes put on a show, and it was a good show. So let me ask you, Kelly, do you see Montreal's fortunes for this season with what they've done, regardless of 85 and such? You know, let's step aside from that issue, but do you see the team growing further?
Not really, because I had always assessed that they would be second in the East, ahead of Toronto and behind Hamilton. And I think that's where, you know, regular season will end up. And I agree with Serge in saying that
you know, they've always been competitive. It's going to take a lot anytime you walk into Percival Molson. You're gonna get a fight every time you play the Alouettes, and you know, I think they will be good within the division. I think Ottawa will be dominated by Montreal. I think that's near and dear to the Montreal fans, that if they can win those games at home, that'll be very pleasing for them. And of course, the always entertaining Argos and Montreal matches there. So, yeah, I think they'll do pretty well.
Well, and like some revenge against Hamilton for beating them in the Eastern Final.
Right.
Semifinal, sorry.
I'm thinking, like, maybe even 11-7, you know, those kind of numbers.
Yeah, that sounds realistic.
Yeah.
Like I said, if they do play Hamilton in the playoffs again, it could be, like, 98-99. We could, like, lose by a single point to them or something. Like, in a playoff game, well, whoever we face, I expect it'll be another close, tough game, and, you know, maybe a heartbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Christopher.
Yes. Montreal.
Yeah.
I've pegged Montreal in the number two position, just like Kelly has for a long time. One of the best receiving corps in the league, if not there. I'm still unsure on Troy Smith, but I think he's going to be a lot better than what most people think he's going to be. I'm happy with him. They're going to do well. They're going to do well. Hamilton has just done too much this year to ignore them as being the first place contender. That's the bottom line. Because if Montreal did the same things that Hamilton did, it wouldn't be a contest.
Right.
But you know, and I think Toronto's going to be fighting for that third and final playoff position, and Ottawa may just be able to scoop it on them.
No doubt. Okay, Michael, what about you? If you don't mind me calling you Michael.
No, I'm cool with it.
Okay.
My thoughts on Montreal, I'm going with 11-7, maybe 12-6. And this is what I'm speaking on without 85. 85 don't come play.
I haven't seen any
jerseys
on sale so far.
The receiving core that they have this year is a lot better from last year. You have Dave Stoller, and you still got S.J. Green, Jamel Richardson, and then you got Deron Carter, who's going to be much better than what his rookie season was.
Yeah, but it's his last season here, isn't he?
It might be, but then again, if he get a good deal at the end of the season, he might stay. But I'm pretty sure, you know, his dad might get a chance to work something out, or you know, get a couple of teams to look at him. If not, all 32 teams in the NFL. Who knows? It's up in the air. But you know, Troy Smith, I have confidence in him. You know, I have seen a guy play in the NFL. I didn't see him play in college, and the guy's a good quarterback. Man, they couldn't pick a better quarterback. I signed a better quarterback last year to come in and take the helm. The two that they had last year, as I used to say, my other guys can't even hold his jock straps. So
there you go.
Montreal is they're good. I picture them going first or second in the East.
And nothing's changed since the end of last year in your mind?
Nope.
They would have been second as far as you're concerned this year by what they showed last year.
Oh yeah, because Deron Carter is going to be like one of the best wide receivers in the league this year, and he's going to prove it.
Okay,
especially in
Manasseh.
Yeah, if I could just speaking of Montreal, I know you had that whole thing about sensitivity and Donald Sterling and all that, but I think the Donald Sterling thing, I don't think it was as big of a deal as what happened in Boston, and the way that whole entire city just went off. I mean, the fact that the N-word was trending in Boston speaks volumes to the reaction. And for those who haven't been to Boston or don't know about it, it's probably the most racist city in America. And I'm talking about including the whole South. And anyone who hasn't been there, Boston is basically, the best way I can explain it, is it's a ton of poor white people live in it. Like, imagine what you would think if you go into a ghetto and you go to like Section 8 housing and project housing, you're expecting to see black and, you know, Hispanics. In Boston, most of those places have white people in it. And I don't know if people knew this, but And what everyone knows, regardless of race, anytime you have a lot of poverty in the area, there's usually a lot of ignorance, and that's why, you know, you have
and
a lot
anger.
Of people in Boston.
And anger.
Yeah.
And hatred.
Yeah. And the way they went off on Subban, I mean, I just want to give him props for how he handled it and not, you know, go
well,
off.
We're
going
to try
and
finish it in four, you know, so we don't have to go back.
Oh, that's the well, whole point, right? And I mean, you know, I'm not even that big of a hockey fan, but they got me excited for Montreal, man. I hope they win the cup.
It's not the
just
first
so
time Subban has run into that. Before I paint a picture
yep.
of this wonderful little world that we live in here in Canada, racism does exist. It exists everywhere. It's just to what degree.
Well, this week's
you know,
been racism awareness, clearly.
Hasn't it?
Hey,
hasn't
Frank,
it?
Have you ever been to Boston, Frank?
Yes, I have.
You have? Okay, so you kind of know what Manasseh is talking about, then, huh?
No, I wasn't there long enough to establish that. But what I can say is this about Boston. Their fans, their hockey fans, what's happening doesn't surprise me. They're very obnoxious. You know, Philadelphia fans
oh, yeah.
have a horrible reputation. But
because Philly's
but,
just like Boston, the same type of city, poor white people living in the inner city.
Well,
the only two cities in America where you find it at that large number of people.
Where they have a high level of anger. You know, at the stadium, they're very hateful. They're full of hate and anger. Is it pretend, you know, or what? I don't know. But it just is what it is to me. And I don't get any happiness, especially being on the net talking about hockey and stuff. Bruin fans are the most obnoxious. They're the most obnoxious. And they're the worst. They're the worst losers. Like, they can't stand losing. After a game that they won, the net's full of commentary that's, you know, wonderful. Should they lose, they disappear like cockroaches when you turn off the light or turn on the light, you know? I don't mean to
yep.
compare them to cockroaches. I'm just saying they act that way. They're
no,
not
I, we understand. We understand.
You know, they're just weird fans. They're like, you know, but they don't put up with any grief, and that I congratulate them for. And I say the same thing about Philadelphia fans. You know, to a degree, it's a good thing because you don't put up with a lot of crap. And Serge himself would have to admit that there's a little bit of that in Montreal when it comes to hockey, where there's low tolerance. It's not. I'm not talking racism here now. I'm talking about the anger when it comes to losing. Montreal has a reputation of not taking losing very, very well when
oh,
it comes
sure.
to hockey. Right?
If Subban scores in his own net in a similar situation, so sure there's not going to be some N-words in French being it's actually probably more pricey
here. But it won't trend. Before we suggest that, it's not going to trend in Montreal. Because,
well,
but you know what? I'm gonna be watching.
You know, he's a lovable personality here. Although
okay, so
he can be a bit of a hot
finished.
Dog, but it's like people like him for it or hate him for it either way. But it's they're gonna have his back all the way.
That's because he's a Torontonian. You know, he's so full yeah. of himself.
Well, it's like a nice homogenous Canadian team. You got Gorges and Price from BC. You got Mullen from Sask. So yeah, maybe it's going to become Canada's team because you know.
Well, it is Canada's
from all
team.
Around.
There is no other team.
I know, but I mean, it represents players that we have. The Canadian players represent pretty much every area of Canada. So hopefully, you know, we can bring the cup back north. And
in that sense, so does Boston, for that matter. You know.
Aren't the Canadians like the LA Lakers of the NHL? Like, aren't they the premier?
They used to be.
Actually, they were like the present Lakers at one point.
Well, hang on a second, though. Hang on a sec, because I'm gonna sound like I'm going against what I just said. They haven't won a cup in 21 years.
Right.
First of all, but there is no other major league franchise that has won as many championships as the Montreal Canadiens, or the Yankees just passed them by one.
Right. And, yeah, that's what I meant, like in the overall history of the league.
Yeah.
Like they're the most...
Oh, yeah,
for that,
okay.
You are 100% right. And believe it or not, the Leafs are like a distant second.
But they are
they're the team that we all love to hate.
Like, aren't they the most valuable team? Like, if you were to buy an NHL franchise,
nope.
Wouldn't the Canadiens
Toronto
be the
is.
Most expensive?
Toronto
oh,
is.
Oh, the Maple Leafs, okay.
The Toronto is. It is because it's in a saturated market that's far bigger than Montreal as far as corporate... Toronto's the corporate hub. not to get into a giant political thing. 20 years ago, Montreal was political
and then
situation.
They moved to Toronto. That's why
and
Toronto is now, because all the exiled Montrealers are making it the city, you know, that it is now.
And exiled companies as well. Exiled companies as well. So
yeah.
Toronto has a corporate base that is that is not comparable. Their corporate base is so big and so strong, it props up the Boston Bruins. TD is Toronto Dominion Bank. And it's prominently displayed when you watch the hockey. When you walk into the stadium, there's a giant square, and the cameras can't help but miss, can't help but hit the big giant green TD. That's the Toronto Dominion Bank. The TD Center is the Toronto Dominion Bank. It's all about money, and Toronto has a lot of money. They could support another team here. We could have another team here, but they refuse to give it to us. They would rather we pay $400 per game. But anyway, enough about hockey and enough about racism. Montreal, Montreal, we still have, if I'm not mistaken, we did Mike, we did Christopher, we did Kelly. We did Kelly, right? Did we do Kelly?
Yep.
Yeah, oh,
Montreal.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's my turn. To take the Montreal and the Quebec theme, the Eastern Division is two solitudes, in my opinion. There's going to be a battle for first and second, ironically, between two inexperienced quarterbacks. One, of course, we've mentioned both on this show, but we haven't mentioned Kolaros yet this year. And it's going to, first and second place is going to be fought between Smith and Kolaros. And I think Kolaros' experience, however slim an edge that is, will be enough to give Hamilton first place, because I happen to think that quarterbacks mean everything. And then the other solitude will be for the final playoff spot, which will pit two of the most experienced quarterbacks in the CFL, Burris and Ray. And we're going to get to see some very interesting games that mean a lot between those two teams, Ottawa and Toronto, and, of course, Hamilton and Montreal. And enough being said, the competition, as was said earlier, that Ottawa and Montreal are natural rivals that go back to previous, you know, Ottawa teams, and of course, I don't have to tell anybody here the disputes that have taken place in various locations between the Kitty Cats and the Rowboaters. So you know, it's going to be interesting this year in the East Division for Montreal, because quite frankly, it really is as Serge said, all these teams have pieces. The Argos have yet to really pick up their pieces yet, but I'm confident they will. You know, the two best teams in the East right now, Montreal, because you guys were putting them in positions, are relying on young quarterbacks. The two teams that are going to fight for a playoff spot are relying on experienced quarterbacks, which I think is interesting. And I think Montreal is the real deal. They gave Hamilton everything Hamilton could handle in the Eastern semifinal. And I think they were well worth that score. And I've said before, and I'll say it.
And the
forever.
Refs weighed in a bit. So.
Well, they might have weighed in a little bit. But one thing that can't be denied, Hamilton didn't win that game hands down. So that should tell you something.
The East final? Come on, Frank.
No, that's not what I said.
No, we're talking about the semifinal game.
And on the final.
The final
was close.
I'm saying.
The Montreal-Hamilton game.
If we're trying to suggest the difference, because we're talking here about Montreal and what kind of hope they have this year, they didn't finish that far off the mark to a trip to the Grey Cup. One could assume by virtue of the way the teams played that Montreal would have probably beaten Toronto as well.
I'm not so sure either,
but I'm just saying because I think I use that four-letter word, hope. You know, and I believe this is the time of year where teams are going to try and deliver hope to their fans, because they want to sell those tickets before hope is lost. Because if they don't sell them now, they're not going to sell them when hope is lost. So yeah, this is the best time of year to sell fans on hope. And I think Montreal, I don't think it's that hopeful for them to finish second. I think it's a realistic goal. And I'm still not giving up on the Argos. I just don't have anything to throw out there and say this is why, because I happen to think that the why's coming later. Let's go to Ottawa. I know we all agree, and we don't have to mention the fact that this is a team that is one of the best. I think we all agree that one of the best expansion teams in the CFL ever, and they'll do a fantastic job this year. That's for sure. I guess this is my way of saying I'll start, and they will give the third place team a tough battle for the final playoff spot. Whether that's Toronto or not, really doesn't matter. I just think that the fans have a hope that they're going to have a team that will be competitive. And again, that's what you hope for, and more so when you're an expansion team, because you know you're waiting for the other shoe to drop when your team folds like a cheap tent. Hopefully it won't for them. Serge, Ottawa?
We all made fun of their name, we all made fun of their mascot, but once they're on the field, I don't think they'll be taken quite seriously after a few games. Yeah, I expect them to be... you'd expect them to be the team not to make the playoffs this year, but maybe, just maybe, they might get it on the first year, the first shot. But it'll be tough because they're really starting from scratch, and, you know, with a rookie head coach, so even really a rookie GM. So it's but I don't know. I'm looking 6-12. If they do better than 6-12, and you know, that's. It's not a bad start, but I see them in 2-3 years, you know, next year and the year after, to be more competitive.
Well, they're going to be competitive, and that's a good thing. Mike, we only got a few minutes left, so let's see if we can get to every team. Mike, Ottawa? Manasse, Ottawa?
Yeah, no, I think Ottawa's going to be a lot better than we think. The big thing for them is their defense, the defensive line with Keith Schulligan and Zach Anderson. And even on their O-line, getting guys like Joe Appel, if you can get experienced guys and can own it in the trenches, I think that gives that's the foundation for any good team, and they seem to have that. And Eric Frazier, Javon Johnson, two guys who performed at a high level in the CFL, in their secondary as well, and obviously Henry Burris and Siobhan Walker in the backfield. I think they have enough playmakers, enough proven guys. The question is, what type of guys can they fill out the rest of the roster with? And that's going to come down to their GM and how good he is. And if he can find the right guys and Rick Campbell can coach them up, they have a shot to make the playoffs. I don't think there's any question.
Kelly, Bill?
Yeah, it's, it's party time in Ottawa. And I've said before, I think they should focus on building the brand, having a fantastic time out at the park, building atmosphere. If they can go 6-12... that would be a major victory. Definitely see them going at least 4-14.
Oh, okay. Wow. Christopher?
For the record, I like the name, and I like the mascot. Okay, Serge? So it's not everybody made fun of him.
I like the name, too.
I'm a minority.
I think you're a minority there, but anyways.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad. I think the name has a lot of tradition in that city.
And it grows on.
They're going to be a lot better than anybody thinks they're going to be, and I've said that all along. They're, as Manasse said, their D is there. It's well-grounded. It has lots of experience. It may take a little bit to gel. Burris is no slouch back there. And they have depth. I would be 6-12, possibly even 8-10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm more 8-10. I think they're going to win 9 games. I think they're going to win 9-9, and they're going to get the third seed in the East, and Toronto's going to miss the playoffs.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Ruined my life, don't you? All right, Mike, one last chance. Buddy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Matt, I took a business call on the other end.
No. It's okay. Real quick. We don't have much time. Under a minute. Ottawa. Do you see hope in their
like
future? What's
says,
their hope?
They got the quarterback. They got the backfield. They just need to go ahead and fill out the rest of that roster, and I'm pretty sure they're going to do it. NFL cuts through the draft, free agency. I'm looking at them going 10-8, man. 10-8.
All right. That leaves us with Hamilton, and I'll speak for everybody. They're the team to beat. Let's go on to the Western Conference so that we get there. I'm sorry, and the Hamilton fans. Be grateful that you have such a good team. You'll just have to live with that rather than hear us tell you how wonderful you are or how wonderful it's going to be for you. Let's go to Winnipeg. Winnipeg is the alter ego of the Ottawa Red Black. How do they go? Manasseh, you're the biggest proponent of them. You might as well start.
Yeah, I think for them, they're actually going to struggle this year. I think Drew Willey is going to bomb. The more I've seen things, stuff I've seen from minicamp, I don't know if he'll be the guy, but they have everything else. Their defense is solid. They got a great group of receivers. They got a decent O-line. They may have to wait one more year to find a quarterback, but once they figure that out, maybe a year or two down the road, they'll be back. But until then, they might struggle, but they might sneak into that third seed. That's if Drew Tate's injured all year and Calgary bombs. So that's where I'm going to have him at.
Kelly, you're a big Winnipeg fan.
Yeah. I think we'll win two out of three this year against Winnipeg. And I see Winnipeg. As I said before, coming in probably around fourth. I mean, I can put them above Edmonton, but I can't stretch it over Saskatchewan or Calgary. And I think BC is the class of the West.
Serge, you love Winnipeg.
Yeah, sure. They were 3-15. If they can go 6-12, you doubled your. That's the best I can expect from this team this year. 9-9 would be like a real stretch. So.
Rookie coach.
Yeah.
Sure. With very little head coach experience. Did I do Mike? Mike?
Nope. Well,
yeah, I'm doing
I'm,
you
I'm,
last.
You're going to do me last or you're going to do Chris last?
No, I'm going to do Chris last. I said Mike.
Okay.
He's right, though.
Okay.
I haven't done
him. I'm like when I say, I don't think Drew Willey's going to be the answer, so they need to hurry up and get some package to get Kevin Glenn. At least they can go 9-9 with Glenn, maybe 10-8. I'm looking big things for Mike Sims Walker and Nick Moore. But other than that, man, I already can't say too much about Winnipeg, man. They're not really on my radar this year. I think they're going to struggle real bad.
Christopher.
Rookie president, rookie GM, rookie coach, rookie quarterback, rookie team. They'll be lucky to get their three wins they had last year.
Oh, okay. So you're saying rookie, they're getting rooked.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure I'm clearly understanding. Okay, Christopher, we'll start with you in your favorite place in the world, otherwise known as Ryderville.
Okay. Saskatchewan's not as bad as the doom and gloom that a lot of people have been saying because there are 20 players that have exited the building. They've picked up a couple of good receivers, although they do not have CFL experience, so it may take some time for them to figure this out. They need a running back. I haven't seen that yet. They haven't really found anybody for Craig Butler yet. Last year, Saskatchewan was lucky to win half of the games that they did. I do not think that they are as good as they were last year. They barely made it into second place. I expect them to be fighting with Edmonton for the final playoff spot.
Okay. Let's go to Kelly because I don't want any time for him to seethe.
No problem. I'll say that I have a lot more confidence in the Riders' ability to replace those guys maybe than even Chris does, but I think he was more than fair in his assessment that, we're not as bad as everybody thinks. And, you're looking at a champion every time you line up across from your guy, and that's kind of tough to overcome in itself. So Craig Butler, he's a will linebacker. So, we just released Ejiro Kwala, a Canadian. We're not really having too much trouble figuring out what's going to happen at linebacker here as far as speculation, and that's that Tyron Brackenridge might move back into that spot. If you remember correctly, in 2012 when he played there, he was the best in the league. So we might be looking at replacing a safety instead. I'll leave it there.
Okay, and now let's go with Serge.
Saskatchewan? Yeah.
Yeah.
They were 12-6 last year. I give them 10 or 11 wins, second or third, possibly a Western final berth. We'll see.
Okay, and that leaves me with Mike Townsend, the new Saskatchewan.
They're going to be first. I believe it's going to be a dogfight between BC and Saskatchewan for the first and second place. They lost a lot of players, but they're not as bad off as what everybody thought, like everybody alluded. Running backs, they're going to get one because Corey Sheets will be back once he gets released from the Raiders. They lost Dressler, but they picked up Chaz Schillings. And like Chris alluded to, that they picked up some receivers that don't have CFL experience, but with Chaz Schillings, he's a gamer. So I look for him to tear up all them defenses on the West Coast, especially with the long ball. Durant is going to lick his chops, be throwing that long ball to him all day. 6'4", 235, oh, yeah.
Manasseh?
It's going to be a hell of a fight for them D-backs.
Yeah, I agree with Serge and with Mike. I think they're going to be a good team. I think they're going to be second in the West, and I expect to have a great West Final with Saskatchewan going to BC Place. And Chris knows if that happens, that's 50,000 plus, and it should be an awesome game, so I'm looking forward to it.
I'm in agreement. I'll make it unanimous that Saskatchewan is not as bad as a lot of people suggest. In fact, this might be the year that they finish first. I'll be the first to say that. The reason I'm saying it is when I hear what I hear, if I'm a Saskatchewan fan like Kelly, please consider us not good enough, because that just works right into what we can do. And I would never bet against Saskatchewan, and especially when everybody else is betting against them, because, as you know, if you're the only one betting on the team, you get a good return for your investment. And I happen to think that Saskatchewan's a lot better than people think. And yeah, they could finish first. But, you know, the thing about the West is, as much as they could finish first, they could finish third, because there are a lot of powerhouses there, which brings me to leading us into the next team. And I'd like to remind the listeners who are listening to us live, we're going to finish this show off properly, and we're going to talk about every team. If we run out of time, we're just going to keep going. And if you want to hear the rest of the show, all you have to do is restart it and then fast forward to the 200th and the 120th minute. Okay, so the next team, we're moving further west, and just because I'll go with Calgary. They're further north, and Calgary, to me,
they're south.
Well, okay, yeah, that's right. Edmonton, the gold Edmonton then. Yeah, they're north. You're right. My apologies. I forgot about the Chinooks. Goes to show I don't live in Alberta. So we'll go with Edmonton. My mistake. My bad. Edmonton is a team that like Saskatchewan, could finish last or finish third. They're really in an awkward position. They've got a coach who's a great motivator. Yes, you've heard on this show how he might have some ego problems, but I have yet run into any athlete or coach that doesn't have ego. It is something you need to be successful. The question is, do you have the brain and the mentality and the understanding of the game and how it's played enough that ego isn't wasted? I don't think it's wasted on him. I think, Chris Jones ran out his string here in Toronto, and he knew he wanted to be a coach. Unfortunately, he didn't wait till the end of the year to stop coaching the Argos. So that's where I think they could finish in the playoffs or at the very bottom. I'm going to say that they're going to fight for a playoff spot. I think they're better than Winnipeg. Christopher?
Well, bang on. I'm a fan of Edmonton at this point in time. I hope they do well. Chris Jones, I think, is a lot better than what he's been made to believe in this group. He was a wonderful defensive coordinator in Montreal. He failed miserably in Toronto, even though they did go to the Grey Cup with him and win. But I'm a huge fan of Mike Riley, and if they put an O-line in front of Mike Riley, he's going to rip it up bad. With Fred Stamps pulling the ball down, gets another couple of players in there, a couple of receivers, he is going to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a deadly receiving core.
You might as well pick up there, Kelly.
Yeah, like, they got Shamad Chambers and Nate Kuhorn, and,
some of these guys that can fill in. They were comfortable enough to let Kerry Koch go in the off season, and you bet he's got some guys to throw to, Chris. I mean, these guys are bona fide receivers, and he's going to have a big year if, like you say, if they can protect him. I think one of the biggest problems last year was McCarty's ability to block kind of dropped off a little bit, and so maybe they need to, you know, address the Canadian fullback in the draft, get some young blood in there. I'm not too sure if they have a young guy already on the roster, but I think Edmonton's, you know, I think they're fundamentally wrong at the top, but I wish them well.
Mike?
I'm like Chris, man. You get an O-line from Mike Riley, he's going to tear it up. But also, you can't take a step back from Matt Nichols, man. You know what I'm saying? I believe it's going to be a quarterback controversy in Edmonton. But they got the good receivers to go along with Fred Stamps. And I see them having a big year. But, again, they need the offensive line to protect the quarterback first in order to get things going.
Serge?
8 or 9 wins, eke into the playoffs, but it could be the dark horse team, and I would not be surprised to see them in the Grey Cup representing the West. So, I mean, they have an average season, but maybe a playoff run, not unlike the 89 Riders. So.
That leaves us with Manasseh, right, Manasseh? I didn't give you Edmonton, did I?
Yeah, I'll give you guys an interesting stat. 1972 to 2012, and during that 30-year stretch, the Edmonton Eskimos didn't have less than 30,000 at a single game. Now, that's just a testament to the great fan base they have there, and we all know the history and tradition they have, and they deserve a winner. I think this is the year that they're going to step up, but they're only going to step up, I think, maybe a couple games at the most, and that comes down to their defense, and I think their defense is going to struggle. And Mike Riley, I think he's going to end up losing the job because the reports I read is that Chris Jones is not high on him at all, and he's actually the one pushing for the competition. And he actually was the guy that wanted Pat White to come in because he actually wants more of a mobile quarterback. So that's what I heard, and I think Edmonton's going to be the last place in the West.
Because essentially they're going to be rebuilding by virtue of that decision. Okay.
They're going to have to fire Ed Hervey. Once Ed Hervey gets fired and then they get a real experienced GM,
that question before we left Edmonton is how long does Ed Hervey, what's the over-under for how long he's GM?
Oh, he's going to be fired by Labor Day. If they get off to a bad start, because it's going to be his fault at the end of the day. He tried to blame the former coach. I forgot his name. But Cavis Reed. Once he got rid of him, now it's all on him. And he's had the pressure of trying to rebuild the squad. He put all his baskets, you know, eggs into one basket with Mike Riley, and if he doesn't pan out the way he's expecting, it's game over for him.
And we know that Chris Jones likes the GM label.
Oh, yeah, it's a perfect – that may be what they're planning on doing anyway. They're just going to play out this season or maybe, you know.
Well, they're given – you know what? The more I think about it because of what you guys just said there – and I think you're right, Manasseh. They might be thinking, you know, well, let's have the dummy GM there for now so that we can really blow this thing up and put it in the right direction, right? And then they get to the point where they dip a little bit and bye-bye GM, and then they move forward from there. You could be right. I mean, the cards are laid out that way. You know, the writing is on the wall. You know, I don't see how that GM can last with his behavior towards the players. That's not the guy you're going to go to war for.
And think about the fact that we've had three successful coach/GMs, whether it was Wally Bono in BC, John Huffnagel in Calgary, and now what Ken Austin's done in Hamilton. So
there
the
you
precedent
go.
Has been set that you can do it and you can be done at a high level, and I think Jones has what it takes.
Barker did it here for 2 years.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well.
That didn't work out so well.
Well,
that didn't work out so well. That didn't work out so well.
Okay.
Just accept that.
Okay. All right. So that was Edmonton. Did everybody get a shot at Edmonton? Okay. I guess they did. And now we're moving south. Frank now knows his geography a little better.
Yep.
To Calgary.
Good.
Okay, since Christopher enjoyed that so much, we'll go with you first.
I am really big on Adrian McPherson being the number one quarterback in Calgary. Uh-oh. Drew Tate is not going to do it. Huffnagel is going to have to concede the fact that his loyalty is lost on Drew Tate. He's going to have to admit that because Tate is going to come in and get hurt again. And somebody's going to have to bail him out again, and this time it's going to be Adrian McPherson. The big thing that the Calgary has to do is that Canadian O-line, they lost a huge anchor. What's his name? Demetrius Sopas?
Sopas.
Yeah.
That's their biggest loss this year, without question.
And Brent Jones is a sophomore, Christopher. So you know what happens to guys in their second year, right?
Yep. So Calgary is going to be a strong, strong second team.
Okay, Manasseh, you were humming on that one.
Yeah, the one thing I got to say, when it comes to Drew Tate, has the capability of being the MOP of the league. And the reason I say that is, have you guys ever seen Drew Tate have a bad performance? Whenever he's played an entire game, which I know has been few, but when he has, he's always played at a high level. And his only knock on him is when he gets hurt. Other than that, he's a gamer. He performs at a high level. And if he stays healthy the whole year, Calgary clearly can be the best team, and I think he's the most outstanding player. If he gets hurt, that thing is going to turn into a grease fire. McPherson, Bo Levi Mitchell, neither of them are ready. And that team, they're going to miss the playoff. That's why I'm banking on him getting hurt, and they're going to get bounced out.
Yeah, they could very well end up out. Kelly, you wanted in on that one a little bit. You got in a little bit.
Yeah, well, just that same thing. I think that Calgary's got a lot of old parts in that old car of theirs, and they've been knocking on it for several years and hasn't worked. They do have some younger guys that I wish they'd allocate more playing time to, especially last year, give us a bit of a better game in the playoffs. But I'm thinking they're going to drop behind the Riders this year. I think that they're going in with a lot of kind of artificial confidence, and I really think they have some major holes.
Absolutely. Okay, that leaves us with Christopher. Did you do Calgary?
Calgary, I started it.
Oh, you know what? Okay.
Didn't.
Mike, thank you, Mike.
Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Calgary, I'm not really banking on McPherson to be the starter this year because he's going to have to come back and get acclimated to the game. Bo Levi Mitchell, he is what he is. Now, and I'm going to say what I said about Drew Tate all along. Hit the weight room, he'd be okay. Get a little bigger, get a bigger frame, he'd be okay. That's his knock. He's small. But if he stays healthy, Calgary can go a long way. Calgary only going to go with Drew Tate, going to take him.
There you go. Okay, now I'll go with Calgary. And my problem with Calgary is that you don't go through two seasons in a row of that kind of disappointment without having a conflict in your mind as to confidence and feeling good about yourself. And I feel as though as an organization they're going to press too hard or they're not going to press hard enough. Two things happen when you're not being successful. When you come close, you either make too many changes or not enough. I've yet to see a team that goes halfway in that regard. And I happen to think that Calgary and the loyalty that their GM has will have difficulty in making the kind of changes that are necessary to erase the memories, the bad memories of a Grey Cup, the 100th, and not making it to the Grey Cup, the 101st. Great team, great possibilities, but they're in a division with a lot of other great teams, which we can all kneel now pay homage to Christopher Jones and his team, the BC Lions, which are probably the favorite to finish first. Why are they the favorite to finish first? Well, they've got one of the best minds in football in their GM. They've got a quarterback, if he's healthy, is, again, to use Manasseh's words, and he left the group temporarily, I hope, chance to be MOP. You know, Lule, and I'll speak for Manasse right now, that his numbers show that he's maybe a little bit overrated. But then again, he does know how to win, and that's something that counts more than statistics, which we've discussed in this group many a time. When it comes to quarterbacks, you know, it's all about particular taste and appreciation. But he's a fun quarterback to watch. Christopher, you're next.
Me? I'll be happy to. The deal's about to be announced that Khalif Mitchell is coming back to the BC Lions. They're also re-talking with Kieron Williams right now. So the defensive line of Eric, Chris Wilson, Kareem Smith, Khalif Mitchell, and Kieron Williams is going to destroy any O-line in the league. We have the best linebacking core in the league, bar none, Adam Big Hill, Solomon Elaminian, and Jamal Johnson. Our DBs, Court Parks, the up-and-coming shutdown corner, Ryan Phillips and Dante Marsh, although they're both getting a little older. Oh. Lee Stelvin lost a step. They're still there. And so I think our arts is extremely strong. Offenses win games. Defense wins championships. O-line, on the offensive side of things, Lule is going to be a strong quarterback, although there's a question on his shoulder and whether he will be ready to go or not. I know Mike is not big on this guy, John Beck. John Beck, I think, is more of a CFL quarterback than he ever was an NFL quarterback, and he will take a little bit to get accustomed to our league, but be a good, strong second. I am not ruling out Wally Bwong after Kevin Glenn yet. I still think that that's definitely in the mix. We do need a solid CFL experience backup, and Kevin Glenn would be it. Receiving core is strong. We have the best duo in the backfield with Stefan Logan and Andrew Harris. Sorry. I'm happy with my team.
And congratulations on that.
Going to the drink.
There you go. Okay, the other Western, the defending champion, Kelly Bale.
Yeah, I think BC's awesome because, you know, it comes down to three aspects in the Canadian Football League. Much more than the NFL, special teams means a lot. BC's wicked on special teams, fellas. They got all the young Canadian studs running downfield, tackling. Now, with that said, like everybody's saying, it kind of hinges on Lule a little bit, but potential to be the most explosive offense with the balance that they can bring with the running attack and the passing attack. Now, defense, like Christopher has mentioned, very, very strong up front. I definitely am going to question their defensive backfield until they prove me wrong. I'm going to be questioning them. But yeah, I see them as first in the West, and I think they'll be happy at home in the Grey Cup this year.
Mike?
My thought on the BC Lions, Lule, he's a good quarterback, but he's not going to finish the season because he's going to hurt that shoulder. And right now, they don't have no quality backup. John Beck, Chris Hart, Jared Lee, none of them going to better be give him some wins. John Beck is more hype than game. If anybody ever watched him in the NFL, he's garbage. Not to disrespect him, but he's not a quarterback. He's garbage. The defensive backs, they're getting old, and they're going to have to deal with some of these new tall wide receivers that's coming into the CFL. It's going to be a lot of penalties, a lot of pass interference calls. J.R. Rhodes is going to get beat every time. Lule goes down, BC goes down. So they better protect him. That's all I got to say.
I wasn't laughing at you, Mike. I was laughing at the reaction of what you said.
I understand.
Okay, good.
I didn't say anything.
Okay, no,
what
I know
Mike
you didn't.
Means
let's
is,
go to,
what
let's
Mike
go.
Means is Beck comes in for garbage time.
Right, Mike?
Yeah, I'm telling you, y'all going to see what I mean by John Bick is garbage, man. You're going to see. He's all mouth, man, and he got more mouth than play. You'll see.
Serge?
I don't care what Wally Buono does. He's not that good of a GM if he going to go get John Beck. Seriously, man.
Well, his nickname is Becker. Serge?
Well, BC is the Montreal of the West. They have, with Montreal, the longest playoff streak, and they'll be there. They'll be, you know, 10, 11, maybe 12 wins. But they might play in the West final, but I don't know. For whatever reason, I think 2011, they kind of, you know, they did, you know, the whole 0-5 thing, and maybe this year. And I just have this feeling, I don't know, I don't think we're going to see him in the final. But, hey, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, so we'll see.
Well, there was a time when the Grey Cup game wasn't played with one of the home teams. So, you know, we could return to that anytime soon. You know, eventually that string's going to break. Right?
I think that string's going to end this year. I don't think it's going to be 4 years in a row. It's just that's tough, you know. So that's the only thing I think it's going against BC is to win. They already did it twice, do it three times. That's very tough. So that's the thing.
Well,
it's a
heck of a run to be on. So let's use that as the final question for everybody tonight. Is just for the, what the heck? We basically set it up and we've said it kind of, but let's be clear now about our Grey Cup finalists, the two teams in the Grey Cup, and who's going to win. Now, I'm saying it's Toronto and BC, and Toronto's going to win the Grey Cup. Serge?
Sorry.
I'm going with an 86 Hamilton-Edmonton. Hamilton wins, only because Edmonton surprised everyone, and Hamilton got a sort of a free pass. So.
There you go. Christopher?
I called this 4 months ago. It's going to be a BC-Hamilton final with Hamilton taking it.
There you go. You and Serge have great minds. Great minds think alike. Fools never differ.
He put Edmonton in there.
That's a big risk. I know.
That's right.
That's a huge risk.
Right.
You
talking
about fools. Sorry.
That's,
you know, BC's a better choice, but I'm going.
I'm sorry I even used that word. Kelly.
It's BC-Hamilton today. I'll get to my official stuff in June.
And who's going to win today?
Well, I would say BC, guys. I see Hamilton being a bit cursed.
I don't think the curse is going to last that long, but okay. This year, they'll be cursed this year. They'll have all the marbles and they'll get upset.
I hope so. I hope you're right, Kelly.
Townsend?
Okay, y'all ready? Drum roll. I'm going with Saskatchewan and Montreal, with Montreal taking it.
Woo, that's a good call. I like
that. Nice. That sounds good.
that has
the
makings
of, I don't want
to
jinx it by, you know, saying Montreal.
No, because, you know, last year I maintained, I said mine already, and we've all had our chance. Last year I maintained that if Montreal made it to the Grey Cup, it wouldn't have been the cakewalk for Saskatchewan, because Montreal had the defense to deal with Saskatchewan's offense.
You got one of the best DBs in the league, man, Chip Cox. And like I mentioned earlier, De'Ron Carter, he's not going to get where he's just getting better. I mean, off-season workout, get more acclimated to the CFL style of play. Oh, man, he's going to stretch the field, man. And Trey Smith is going to eat that up.
And you know, the kind of momentum that Montreal would have had, you know, it was clearly becoming – you know, even though Toronto finished first, and as an Argo fan, and I think they're a great team, but we were hurt. During the season, you could see the momentum shift where Hamilton was taking over, you know, being number one in the East. But a lot of people ignored how well Montreal was playing. You know, the games that they lost close. And when they lost, they lost because of inexperience more than anything else. And so, in my opinion, it was fortunate for Saskatchewan that the call was made that was made in the end zone, because if Montreal had played them, we may have seen a giant-sized upset. And I say that with total seriousness, without a single sliver of trying to be humorous.
For sure, because we never know, right? I mean,
right.
we never know.
Yeah, you're right. And that's not to take anything away from Saskatchewan. I just happen to think I just happen to think a lot of times you get one of those scenarios where a team establishes themselves one season, and if I can take it to hockey, it's like San Jose Sharks every year. They establish how great they are, and it's almost that's what they needed to do. Like Hamilton's big deal was getting to the Grey Cup. I don't think it meant anything for them to win the Grey Cup last year. I think they expended all their emotional, coin on basically beating Toronto and making it to the Grey Cup. And I don't think they had anything left by the time they got to the Grey Cup. Montreal, on the other hand, had a later progression. They started very poorly. Their season was rather short. But anyway, and I think they could have carried that momentum into the Grey Cup and the experience they had on defense. And as you guys all know, Carter, just an outstanding receiver, that would have been a great...
Jim Popp is head coach. I don't think so. I think the biggest reason is Austin outcoached Popp in the games that he beat him. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think that was Bill.
Well, Austin's a great coach. Austin, no doubt, he's a great coach. He's a great manipulator as well. He's a great manipulator. Well, I learned that this year.
That was one of my highlights for 2013, was beating Kent Austin three times. I mean, Corey Chamberlain, that's a real feather in his cap.
So it was a great, it was a great year for a couple of teams. It was a not-so-good year for a couple of others. But one thing that can't be forgotten this year, guys, we're going to leave it there for this week, this Friday. And thanks again, Kelly Bale, Saskatchewan boy. And, of course, Mike Townsend, Michigan boy.
That's right.
And I can say that here in Canada. Now, if I say that in Boston, I could be in trouble.
Right.
Christopher Jones. BC boy extraordinaire, soon to own the BC Lions. Thank you.
Give it a rest.
Oh, what the heck.
So, and, still a lot of dead frog beer, though.
There you go. And Serge Devertien.
Get your owner the outlet.
and go Raptors.
Yes, go Raptors.
I think they lost tonight, didn't they?
Yeah,
back in
Sunday.
The end, lost by 10, but it's okay. It's
Sunday.
Yeah. I was watching that game, man. Wow.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, before I hang up real quick, man, I want to give a shout-out to my boy B.J. Hall. Just signed with the Tampa Bay Storm last week. There you go.
Congratulations, B.J. And I want to say hello to Phyllis Babin and, of course, Bruce John Inch, and wish them a speedy trip there and a speedy trip back with no incidents, and hope they really enjoy their time there in Myrtle Beach. I am envious, even though I was just there last month.
Big happy birthday to Bruce.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Bruce.
And a shout out to Manasseh, who dropped, I don't know why he dropped, and it doesn't matter why he did, and that's sorry you're not here to say goodnight. Thanks, Manasseh, for your contribution. As always, and all I can say is, guys, thanks again. So, this has been another episode of Candid Frank Live. CFL is the best football in the world. If you have any doubt, just check it out, and you'll find out. Another thing that we have is we also have the best fans in the world, with the greatest cities in the world. Coincidentally, they're all Canadian, but that's okay. Even our American friends like some of our Canadian cities. Maybe not all, but some. One thing's for sure. We will talk about football. We will talk about the politics of football. And sometimes we'll stray on the outside perimeter of football and talk about some, exciting stuff that's going on in the world. The biggest and most important thing that I'd like to leave you with today is we have people who are misguided and or dumb to begin with. We've got a mayor here in Toronto who needs help. He should get help. And people should stop enabling him from not getting help. Unfortunately, everybody loves a train wreck. Everybody stops for a train wreck. And everybody can't resist having a picture taken with a train wreck. Just wondering how many people are standing in line to have a picture taken with Mr. Sterling. Somehow, I don't think as many. I think, in fact, that this guy is one of the reasons why the world is not such a good place for old men. who don't change the way they think. They can't. That's why God invented death, so that these people can leave and the new thinkers can take over. And that's not me wishing that the man dies. I'm just saying that's how things change. Sometimes you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It's never right to pick on somebody and or to cause someone to be second in line just because of what they look like or where they're from. On that note, we're from Canada. We love our country. And always a red white, always a red white for sure. That would be me. And for those of you that enjoyed the program, thank you. For those of you that didn't, come back again and give us a second chance, maybe a third or a fourth as well. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Candid Frank Live. The CFL is the greatest football in the world. Thanks for tuning in.